It's time for TWiT this week in tech. Wow, we have a great show for you. Jason Heiner is here from Tech Republic. Alex Lindsay from Pixel Corp. Oh, and J.J. Stone. Oh, doctor, we don't know where he's from. Mars, I don't know. We're going to talk about what's going on with self-driving cars. The latest news from Twitter. Apple, why it's getting everything wrong. And I'm going to make a personal revelation that will shock you. It's all next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes and it'll help us make TWiT even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 549, recorded Valentine's Day, Sunday, February 14th, 2016. Self-smoking cigarettes. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com. For a limited time, new customers can get a free trial. Pay just $3 for shipping by going to harrys.com/TWiT. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or beautiful website for your portfolio, to create a blog or business or online store. Enter the offer code TWIT and get 10% off Squarespace. You should. And by Carbonite. Keep your business safe this year. Protect files on your computer or server with automatic cloud backup from Carbonite. Try it free without a credit card at Carbonite.com today. And use the offer code TWIT to get 2 free bonus months if you decide to buy. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/TWIT and entering the promo code TWIT. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. And I've assembled some close personal friends to jawbone about the news, starting with the guy sitting on my right, Mr. Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Corps.
Hello, hello.
Nice to see you actually in studio.
It's crazy.
Alex joins us most weeks for MacBreak Weekly. You're actually the creator of MacBreak.
That's right.
Way back when.
Long ago.
The first 1080p video podcast.
That nearly killed us. Let's do 1080p. It was only 10 years ahead of when we should be doing 1080p.
Yeah. I don't do 1080p today. We do 720p as the highest quality because who needs 1080p?
I'm past 1080p now. I'm doing 4K.
Are you doing 4K podcasts?
Yeah. We're doing 4K production, yeah.
Yeah. At the Pixel Corps. By the way, you posted a wonderful article on Facebook, which I'm forwarding to everybody, how to work on a movie set.
Oh, man.
Which actually applies to every job ever.
Pretty much, but it is required reading for our guys, yeah. If you're watching
Love
here.
Love it. Yeah. We also should say hello to J.J. Stone, Owen J.J. Stone, who is friends. Oh, doctor. Nice to see you again.
A.K.A. the chat room champion. I'm
he
here
is
for people.
The champion. Do you use Oh, doctor in the chat room?
Yeah, I got to let people know. I've been here all day, Uncle Leo. I've been stalking you, heard you answer some great calls, helping people with their virus situation, not needing viruses, why you need viruses, who's got viruses. You know, I saw you doing your work. Never know when I'm in the chat
that
room,
is,
man.
I do God's work on that radio show because I know I don't want to talk about viruses or malware. Hey, or
all
backup.
I'm saying is do your job. You never know when I'm watching you, Uncle Leo.
Somebody's got to do it.
You
I
never know.
Know. Also, Jason Heiner is here from CBS Interactive, the Tech Republic. Hello, Jason.
Yes. Hey. Thrilled to be here, as ever.
And you've got a stack of volumes behind you of the new book.
This
it's out.
Yeah.
Follow the Geeks.
It was a very interesting listen. I did not read it because I don't know how, but I listened to the audio version.
Dan Patterson
and I
recorded
loved
the audio version of that.
Danny yes. Boy did, yes.
Yeah. Very yes. Nice. How exciting. Are you? You're. I noticed you said I have a lot of books to send out. You're doing your own fulfillment, huh?
Well, for the crowdfunding.
I get it. Yeah.
Yeah, we originally crowdfunded the thing because we wanted to make ourselves responsible to readers and not the publisher.
Nice, love it.
I've all the hardbacks came in, and so I've got all those going out this weekend to our awesome crowdfunders. If you are a crowdfunder, thank you, bless you, love it, and I can't wait to get it in the hands of all those folks.
Congratulations. I understand there's a very good chapter towards the end there.
Oh, chapter 9.
Chapter 9, my favorite chapter.
Yeah, love that chapter.
The closest thing to a biography I'm ever going to get, but I was really glad to be a part of that.
We've had so much great feedback on chapter 9, Leo. I mean, not only feedback, but before it was ever published or even released that you were on there, I had the whole Twit army harassing me for months.
Why haven't you covered Leo? You've covered
exactly.
Everything about Leo.
When are you going to cover Leo? This book would be terrible if it doesn't include Leo Laporte.
Well.
Little did they know. We'd already done the interview. Like, it was a done deal.
No, I already knew, but I wasn't going to say anything. So Follow the Geeks is about innovators, digital innovators, entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So it's about the idea, you know, the main thesis is that the future works a lot more entrepreneurial, right? You know, companies are downsizing. Many of them are hiring more contractors. And so that creates a problem and an opportunity for many people, right? There aren't as many stable jobs with big companies, but there are in many cases more opportunities where you can contract with companies.
It's kind of ironic because you're the only guy on this panel who actually has a job.
I know, that is ironic. Very, very ironic.
I've heard of this thing called a job.
But can I tell you?
Not lost on me.
Can I tell you that the future of work actually looks a lot like work? Just like,
yes.
I mean, it's not like it's not work. It's still work.
Right. Right. Yes.
When you're the boss, you actually have to come in more, I think.
Yes. I was picking up some wine for my wife at the and I was at the wine store and the guy said, "So what are you doing this weekend?" I'm like, "Working." He's like, "You own your own business, don't you?"
Yeah.
Like, yes,
see?
Yes.
Yeah. I've worked weekends for years.
Yep.
Yeah.
For this book, I'm preparing for my own future. Also, the book itself, the project is its own business, right? It's its own kind of startup. So that's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah,
if you take the time to read the book or listen to the book as I have, make sure you go to Amazon or Audible and write a review and say how much you loved chapter 9 or Baratunde's chapter or whatever chapter floats your boat. Make sure you leave that review out there and share it the world. Share it as Karen. That's about as much work as I've done this week promoting that.
Thank you.
Whatever you're doing, Ken. I want to copy that, OJ. OJ. Why did I call you OJ? I'm so sorry.
You've been watching The Simpsons, man.
I've been watching The People versus OJ. Wow.
I'm going to tell you two things real quick. When all that was going down, my initials were OJS, and I was dating a Caucasian girl named Nicole. Her father had a problem with
Holy
it.
Holy cow. Did you know a guy named Ron? Because
I was in ninth grade. It was an issue.
You added the second J just because of that?
Oh man, I added the second J because I lie about my middle name and I wanted to be something else. And
I like JJ.
Just J.
JJ Stone is a great.
It's a great name.
Yeah,
that is solid. That really is.
Well, if there's one thing you learn from Follow the Geeks is that really, the best way to live life is to invent it. You don't have to take what you were given. You invent it as you go.
Yeah. A lot of people were forced to become entrepreneurs, right? People that they lost their job or they couldn't get the job they wanted. And so they had to make the job they wanted.
Yeah.
Which is why I admire so many of them, including yourself, Leo.
We've all had jobs. You worked at Lucas.
Yep.
You did the Star Wars.
That was the last job I had.
I worked in radio. And I still kind of technically have a job. I have that radio thing. They pay me, I think. But that was my clever hack, which was to always have to segue. I didn't have the guts. Many people did to leap into it.
I've never leaped into anything. I always just kind of lean towards it. I don't leap. I just kind of lean. You have the job that's paying the money. You have the job that you're trying to get rid of, and you have the job that's taking you where you want to go. And it's just those three, and it's like a little just track. You know, you're slowly moving. And
if you play it safe.
You know, that's awesome. The safe way to do it.
Well, you also know how people think about things like, you know, I'm a secret ninja. Most people don't actually know what I do. But, like, IQMZ has been around since 2005. And from 2002, it was inquiringminds.com, but people couldn't spell. So that's why I bought IQMZ and I got rid of Inquiring Minds. And what I started out doing was I used to do those surveys you would see on Maxim.com and online and stuff like that. Then we morphed into a website company. Then we started doing clubs and party promotions. Then we went back to making websites. Then I started doing digital video and photography. Then I did social media consulting. Then I did websites and stuff again. And now I'm back to doing content on my own. So I've been doing that since 2002. And everybody, somebody says like, oh, you don't know anything about the internet. And I'm like, I've been on the internet since the internet was like the internet before you could do anything on the internet. I used to code in Flash.
I did all.
Bro. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so, you know, it's just funny when people think about the internet. Like, there's so, you got to be fluent. You got to be able to change and do what you need to do. And I've done everything. I don't write code anymore because writing code sucks. I used to do design. I don't do that anymore because it's too tedious. You got to do layers. Now I'm into video photography and stuff like that. And I used to paint. My Superman back there. So I do. You do everything. You got to work with the times.
Wait a minute. Move your head. I want to see that Superman. You painted that?
I did paint that.
Yeah. That's nice.
You can't see it.
I'm thinking of getting a tattoo that looks like that.
You should. Here, look. I'll show it to you closer.
Put it on my scapula. Oh, that's... Oh, wait. Who's Superman? Who's the other guy?
So the one's Superman and the one's my black alter ego, myself with hair.
That's you?
See the O? See the O on his chest?
Oh, it's O-Man.
Oh, nice.
Fro.
Do you call yourself what? Yeah. O-Man? The big O?
Oh, Dr. Dummy? Oh, doctor. Who are you talking to? Oh, Doctor, no doubt. With hair.
Oh, he just did a flip.
Wow.
So the chapters in the book, Follow the Geeks, Baratunde, Thirst. The thing is, anybody who listens to this show will know almost all these people. Lisa Bettany, mostly Lisa, was, of course, the first host of This Week in Photography. Our great friend Gina Trapani, Tom Merritt, ditto. Veronica Belmont, never heard of her. No, I'm just O'Malik. I think they've all been on Twit. Chase Jarvis, one of the great photographers, really an inspiration too. He is a true inspiration. And then some people I did not know, but I loved reading the story of Juliana Rotic. She found Usha Hidi.
I met her in Tanzania.
Oh, neat. So you know her. Mm-hmm. There's some fat guy, and then you end, which I love, with the future, a 15-year-old entrepreneur named Maya Penn. And there she is at TED. So just a great, I think this is a great, inspiring book. And anybody who listens to Twit knows most of the people on this, I think.
Yeah, and the Twit Army, you know, has been super, I sort of joked earlier, but actually Twit Army has been super supportive. Every time I've been on the show and we talk about the book or there's a new chapter, we get, you know, so much interest on the site, in email, on Twitter, social media. And so Twit Army's been awesome. So as a bonus, because the Twit Army's been so awesome, I actually have a coupon code for the Twit Army for 10% off. All you have to do is, it's a Twit. You just put Twit in. If you buy the book and you check out, there you go. Twit Army, 10% off.
Great.
That's not a paid promotion. Sorry.
Great gift. No, you don't have to pay for that. That's great. No, we love our, you know what? Our hosts get to plug whatever they want. It's awesome. Great. And Jason, you're an old friend, and I'm thrilled to be part of the book and thrilled to help support it. 10%. Cool. That's nice.
Yes. And like Odakta was saying, actually one of the coolest things, my last thing is just that adaptability was one of the coolest things I thought, that a theme that runs throughout all these people. Almost everybody in there in the book had to recreate themselves and sometimes multiple times at different times throughout their careers. And I found that to be, when people ask me about sort of the themes that run through it, that's actually one of the ones I bring up the most. And so I'm glad that I'm glad you guys have sort of touched on that too, because it really is key for anybody that wants to.
We've all learned that. Got to be fluid. Got to be like mind, like water.
Just keep on moving.
Let's adapt into one of these stories, Uncle Leo.
Okay, you want to flow?
You people call it Valentine's Day, but I call it All-Star Weekend.
There we go.
Okay, explain to me. I don't know. I'm missing it.
Basketball, All-Star Weekend. Basketball. Kobe Bryant's last All-Star games tonight. Last night was the dunk contest. I had to leave my day early. Well, we didn't leave. We came home early so we could watch the dunk contest. But I don't know why they keep putting on Valentine's Day. I'm like, look, I got basketball to watch. Not, you know, it's important things. And stuff
this is a true
world.
Test.
Dunk contest
of your romantic intentions.
We went out early and we made it back home for the dunk contest. That's all I care about.
That's a good test of your.
Can't miss it. It's live. The people share it on Instagram and I see all the dunks. I already know who won. It ruins it for you, Uncle Leo. You can't get away from stuff anymore.
Yeah.
If you really care about something, you got to watch it live.
Yeah.
That's why I saw Deadpool twice.
Twice in one day?
Because it was live.
It was live. The internet reaction would have been live and the spoilers would have been live. I saw it open the night first show and I saw it again last night.
This is Valentine's Day, but it's also International Free Software Day. So share some love with an open source project that you're particularly fond of. There's lots of great open source software out there. This would be a good day to celebrate that. I love this story. So they have arrested a teen. He was a British kid, 16-year-old teen, who was the kid they believe may have hacked the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security. He's been releasing the contact information for thousands of FBI and DHS employees. He calls himself Cracka with an A, and you'll enjoy this. His hacking crew, Crackas with Attitude.
Wow
is right. But here's the amazing story. Motherboard had this story before he was arrested. By the way, he's going to dump, they said, 20,000 FBI and 9,000 DHS employee details. And they claim to have hundreds of gigabytes. They published these lists on Monday. Motherboard story explains how it happened. It's almost hard to believe. So apparently it all started with a spear phishing attack. The 16-year-old sent an email to a Department of Justice employee. You know how the spear phishing works. It says, you know, this is your bank. We have some documents we want you to sign. The PDF is attached or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's how we believe how the Sony hack also was initially perpetrated was with a targeted email that had a malware payload. In fact, to confirm that, on Monday, the 16-year-old hacker contacted Kelsey Atherton, the reporter at Motherboard, via that DOJ email account. Just, you know, just to prove I do have access to this account.
Right.
So he got the account. He compromised the system. He tried logging into the Department of Justice's web portal. It's an intranet designed for employees. Many companies have this. Couldn't get through.
Because it's got security.
It's got security. So he calls the IT department at the Department of Justice. He said, I called him up and told him I was new and didn't understand how to get past the portal. They asked, do you have a token code? He said, no. They said, use ours. They gave him a token code and he got in.
You're all fired.
This is the Department of Justice. This is the FBI. This is the Department of Homeland Security.
First of all, I love America, and America loves me. Yes. But I will say that sometimes when you think the people are keeping you safe, can't keep you safe because they don't know what they're doing. I mean, it's not even really hacking, really. That's like a phone call. That's like a phone scam. Like you call your grandmother or call somebody's grandmother and get them to buy you a watch or something over the phone. Like that's old school infantry. Like you don't think or have protocols. Like really?
It's really? Social engineering.
Yeah,
and people like Kevin Mitnick, reformed hacker Kevin Mitnick, who's a good friend, he wrote a whole book on social engineering. He said that's really the weak point. You can have the best passwords. You can do everything, you know, two-factor authentication, fingerprint scanner. But if some customer service rep is going to give it all up with a phone call, you're screwed.
Well, and it's amazing how just with an air of authority, how far you can get in a lot of places. I mean, definitely like had to get back into a location where I did belong, but I didn't have whatever I needed. Just talk my way through it.
Act like you belong.
You know, just I was like, you know.
Hi, this is Cracka the Hacker.
Well, he had an English accent.
I can't get into the portal.
The issue is.
I can't get into the portal.
Well, the thing is that immediately as an American.
That would be a giveaway.
There's an inferiority
they're
complex
smarter than
we
us
have.
Because they talk like that.
So, you know, and so they're like, oh, he has an English accent. He must know what he's talking about.
Unbelievable.
It's the journalist thing. Like if you act like you're supposed to be there or act like you should get the information, like a lot of times people give it to you. I mean, journalists do this all the time. I had one week where I got kicked out of the White House and the Capitol both just because
what?
I wasn't I was someplace I wasn't supposed to be, but I was just acting like I was supposed to be there. It's a long story, but the bottom line is, you know, people are the weakest link. It's not the security. Yes. And it's a lot shorter loop. That's what Kevin Mitnick was great at. He's like, you know, it's a lot shorter loop to talk to somebody and, you know, be nice to them and, you know, ask for their help and they'll help you than to try to spend, you know, hours and hours on a lot of computer code to run some kind of brute force attack to steal their password. When in fact, they'll probably just let you in if you're nice to them.
Well, it was 3 years ago. Remember Matt Honan's article? We all friends with Matt, yes. Love Matt. He had, unfortunately, the Twitter handle MAT, and three-letter Twitter handle is catnip. And again, it was teenagers, and the way they got in was he had strong passwords, wasn't that? They wanted his Twitter account, so they used customer service reps at Amazon and Apple to get into it. And they used it to get into his Gmail and then asked Twitter to send the Gmail. He says, if I'd used two-factor on Google, I might have been all right, but I wasn't using it at the time. That is one lesson, two-factor. But again, if it's a customer service rep, they'll say, oh, well, let me just give you your second factor. Oh, you don't have the token? No problem. That's 624137, okay?
They don't have caller ID to know somebody's calling outside the system.
Oh, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. You can spoof any caller.
I'm being facetious. It's the point. Of the fact that it's just, you know, but they want access to Facebook. They want to go through Twitter's servers and databases. Like, for what? Y'all are stupid. What are you going to find in there that somebody else can't tell you that's going on? Like, really? Really?
I do think we're going to see a lot more, as biometrics now. You know, right now it's convenience. I can open up my iPhone, but I think
love
is
fingerprints.
I saw a report. I guess that Apple now is going to let you say your password, to your Apple TV. You know, and I was like, I do not want to say my password in front of my kids. What I want to be able to do is just hold down my thumb on my phone and have it let me buy that movie. You know.
Yeah, and unless I spell it out, they're not going to understand my password anyway. My passwords are incredulously impeccable and cannot be hacked by anyone because they are ghetto hood rat typings of words like that you wouldn't imagine to be able to spell.
Oh, yeah. I would never think of that.
No.
You know, if you use leet, you know, three instead of an E or...
Oh, yeah.
Nah, they know that. They just get right through that one. And I'm sure they have access to the Urban Dictionary, too, you know.
Well, you know, the way I spell Big Papa and the way you spell Big Papa are two totally different things. Then there's a number and a capital letter all up in there. So go have fun with Big Papa, people.
There's
come
actually
get in there if you can.
A related story. It's kind of interesting. The Error 53 story, which relates to this fingerprint reader. We'll talk about that in just a second. I want to take a break right now. But Alex Lindsay is here for Pixel Core. Mr. Owen J.J. Stone from IQMZ.com. He's at Odokta with an H on the Twitter. What?
Tis I.
I thought you said for shizzle. I was. I'm sorry. But you would say that, wouldn't you? Argot, the argot of the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hood be.
The hood be. I love speaking the argot of the hood.
I like when you read rap lyrics.
I'll do that a little later on.
Sometimes I play those clips back to go to sleep at night. It soothes me.
You know, I feel that Straight Outta Compton got ripped off. I really enjoyed that movie.
Forget Straight Outta Compton. Creed. I cried three times when I saw Creed.
Yeah.
I haven't
seen that yet. Worth seeing?
You didn't see Creed?
No, but it's going to be up for rent on Tuesday, and I'm going to see it. Lisa and I are in a quest to see all the Oscar-nominated movies. And Stallone did get nominated, but you're saying...
Yeah, 10 seconds to tell you the best part, right?
Yep.
So the kid's going to... Rock, and he's like, look, help me train. Rock is like, so he's like, well, just write down some stuff for me to work out on the gym. So Rocky sits down in the car with him. He writes his whole list for like 20 minutes. And he's like, all right, kid, if you do these, you know what I mean, you're going to be all right on your way. So the kid takes the paper, takes a picture of it, hands it back to Rocky, starts jogging off to the gym. And he's like, you left the paper here. He's like, I took a picture. He's like, what happens if you lose your phone? He's like, unk, it's in the cloud. And Rocky just looks up. He's like, the clouds.
Classic Rocky.
I love it. Yes. What's the clouds?
It's just a feel-good movie.
What's
it is
the
a cloud? Great movie. My goodness, I love that movie. Black director. Rocky was good. At, like I said, I literally cried three times. I mean, I got
really
father, wow. daughter, daddy love issues, family. It was just a good family.
I have a horrific confession to make right now. I've never seen any of the Rocky movies.
What?
You're lying.
No.
What?
You're lying.
No.
You, how much of your life have you wasted not doing what you're supposed to do?
What else are you doing wrong?
I've never seen any of the Fast and Furious movies either. Now,
no,
in Fast
that's not no. Rocky okay. is an American. Okay. You can't. You know what? The rest of this week, I don't care what you're doing. Your free time. If you don't at least watch Rocky 1 and Rocky 2, I'm gonna get on a plane and come smack you in the face.
Okay.
That's how important they are okay. to American culture and okay. the way the world works.
And probably I should see them before I see Creed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Man.
But at least one and two.
Yeah, maybe up, maybe even three, because like you got to listen to that speech where Rocky gives to Adrian on the beach in three too. Yeah, man, you got to.
I'm so upset that you've never seen any Rocky movies.
All right, this week I have an assignment. Not only do I have to see all the Academy Award nominated movies, I also have to see Rocky 1, 2, 3.
So you're not coming to work, is what you're saying?
Yo, who needs work?
It's now movie time.
Movie time.
Four. If four, it's like with the Russians. He's like, if you can change. And we can, I can change. Everybody can change.
Oh, that's the
it's
one with beautiful. Dolph Lundgren and the Russian
yes.
flag? Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Rocky yes. Rocky is like the core of America. Like, the blue-collar way the world works. Rocky's like legit. I know that he's a bumbling idiot, but there is such underlying passion of humanity in those stupid movies. And I swear
Amen.
To Jiminy Christmas, you better see him.
Amen.
Get it.
yes.
I'm really upset. Like, my heart actually physically... hurts right now. Like,
now it's
understand.
Almost a point of pride that I will never see the Rocky. Like, I just, like, I don't, if I've gotten this far without it.
You
know.
Haven't gotten this far. You'd be a lot higher in life if you've seen Rocky.
I can be president.
Been holding you back.
Damn. Blew it. All right, good. I'm going to see it, and then I'm going to watch Creed.
So I can calm down.
Wow. Wow. Also here, Alex Lindsay from the Pixelcore, Jason Heiner from Tech Republic. And we will talk about Error 53 in a moment. But first, a word from Harry's. I love my Harry's. We got a great deal for you. We talked about Harry's for a long time. Harry's is, of course, the razor company created by two guys who are passionate about giving you a better shaving experience by delivering an amazing shave at an affordable price and delivering it to your door. So you don't have to go to the drugstore and get them to unlock the razor blades. But do they lock them up because they're so crazy overpriced? Harry's delivers this shave by doing the best thing. They bought the razor factory in Germany. So this is the factory. When they started the company, they said, look, how are we going to do this? Eliminate the middleman. We're going to make the blades. But where do you make the blades? Well, who makes the best blades? Well, it's this factory in Germany. Okay, let's buy it. I love the internet. I love founders. That's how they think. They bought the factory. They designed the blades for performance. They sell factory direct to you, so it's literally half what the big brands charge. You know, now I'm really happy to say they've been with us for how many years? A couple of years. Over a million guys have made the switch to Harry's. A million guys. But what's blowing my mind is you haven't. What is it going to take? Well, Harry's has found a way. They're going to give you a free shave. Yes. Harry's now has, for a limited time, a free trial. You just pay $3 for shipping. Go to harrys.com/twit and redeem offer. What are you going to get? You're going to get the handle, the beautiful Truman handle. You get your choice of colors. This is the I don't know what's in here. Which one's in here? Yeah, it's a Truman. You're going to get the blades. You're even going to get a little Harry's foaming shaving gel, which is great. This is not the sample kit. This is a regular Harry's kit. But you can get this kit for $15, so you know it's your choice. Show the sample kit again. I want to see what they've got. Okay, so you get the razor, you get the blade, you get the foaming shave gel. I think it's a sample size. You get the thing that I really like that we never talk about. Well, actually, we do now because I really like it. The travel blade cover, which protects your hands. You can put your razor in the shaving kit, keeps it dry, it airs it out, and you don't get cut up. I love this. And you need that because you know what? These are sharp blades. They're great. They give you such a close shave. And, man, the price is right. Why are you paying $32 for an 8-pack of blades when you get them half as much at harrys.com? And, by the way, when you get the free kit, you're going to also sign up for the monthly. You can cancel if you decide you don't like it. You won't. get the monthly shipment. I get them every other month. They ask you, how often do you shave? Right there. How often do you shave? And then they send you the razor blades and the foaming shave gel or the cream. I like the cream. Try the cream, too. Harrys.com, Harrys.com/twit. I shave with Harry's every morning, and you should, too. And if, you know, I know a million guys have switched. Half of them come from us, I'm sure. But what I don't understand is why you haven't. So now, will you do it if you get the free one? How about that? Harrys.com/twit. Harry's.
You know what's a cool lesson about that that, like, entrepreneurs can take from it is just, like, it's a solved problem, right? People that go and they take, like, something that's a solved problem that everybody thinks, like, why do you need another razor, right? Do you need somebody to make it? And then somebody comes along and they find a better way to
do it. I'll tell you why. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thing,
right?
That's what's really cool about the internet. And a lot of our sponsors, like PillPack, where, you know, the pharmacy by mail, a lot of the sponsors are reinventing age-old processes that Casper, they're making mattresses and selling them direct, that you would think, well, that's a solved problem. But you're exactly right, Jason. There's a huge amount of opportunity thanks to the internet, thanks to a lot of stuff. We did on Monday, I interviewed the inventor of the Sphero.
Yep.
I love those. I have every Sphero. My daughter has them.
Right. You don't know them. And, of course, the new BB-8 is a Sphero. And he tells a story of how they started it. And, you know, they were trying to create a friendly robot. It's really interesting. And he's got great ambitions, too, by the way. It's well.
Do you know what? Another thing I saw people want it as? It's as a go-kart.
Yeah, there you go.
Not a go-kart, like an RC car. Like when I play with it, I try to explain to people, like, it's like having an RC car when you were a kid. You control it. It zooms around. Like, don't think of it as like a robot or whatever when you looked online. Think of it like an RC car. You could drive and jump stuff. It goes in the pool.
Have you played with that new one, the auto that jumps?
I have all of them.
What's it called?
Well, Leah has all of them.
It's the right. Leah. Yeah. Your kid has them all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the Ollie.
Ollie. That's it.
Yeah. I wanted the Darth Vader version when they were sold out when I went to go buy, so I had to get the regular white one.
So he and his co-founder went to a Disney, they had some sort of Disney startup camp, right? Mm-hmm. And they thought, this is Sphero, there's got to be some relationship we could do with Disney, maybe, you know, because we personify the stuff, right? In fact, one of the things they did, the third employee they hired was a videographer. And I thought that was really interesting. They immediately said, no, we got to tell the story. There's going to be a story. There's got to be a backstory. So Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, said, hey, guys, I really like this Sphero. Come here. I want to show you something. They go in a room. He has his smartphone. He pulls it out. This is like 2 years ago when they're making The Force Awakens. He says, I want to show you some pictures. Nobody's seen these. And they're looking. And they said, we're like trying to memorize this. Listen, we're seeing stuff nobody's ever seen. And there's the BB-8. And Iger says, see that? We want to make a robot like that. We could do that.
Yes, we can. Yeah.
We could do that. It's a great story. It's really interesting. But that's another example of, just out of the box. I love the era we live in. We live in amazing.
There's a lot of opportunity.
We really do. Yeah. We really do. For all the pessimism there is out there at times right now, I think that some of it is it's natural because it's like shifting sands, right? The sands are shifting underneath our feet. But in any time of great upheaval is tremendous opportunity. And it's also, you have so many people doing so many things so creatively and, you know, reinventing processes like you talked about, reinventing ways to do things, trying to make things better. And that kind of passion and that kind of commitment to, you know, just being better and doing something useful and being useful to other people, I think is just kind of the spirit of the age.
We interviewed on the new Screensavers yesterday one of the physicists from Caltech who did the LIGO experiment. Talk about inspiring. I mean, if you're interested in science, the Large Hadron Collider and now this, proving Einstein's 100-year-old theory of gravitational waves, discovering actually gravitational waves with this massive experiment. And I said, that must have cost a lot of money. I mean, he said, well, thanks to the National Science Foundation, they did the pilot experiment, which cost like $250 million. We were able to,
yeah, you know.
Well, but wait a minute. And then they eventually, the whole thing all in, two big experimental facilities on the East and West Coast. There's more going to be built around the world. a little under a billion. He said, but I got to tell you, that's, you know, Star Wars money. One movie.
Right.
And I think we are surrounded by miracles, by wonders. We have now seen gravitational waves created by two black holes kind of colliding and proven that there is actually gravitational waves. It's incredible. I said, well, what does that mean? He says, well, who knows? I don't know. But they're there.
But I think one of the things that's really important is just to realize how malleable the, you know, reality is. I think a lot of us tend to be say, let's be realistic about this. And there's no reason to be that realistic.
We can shoot for the moon and beyond.
Yeah. We had a client that asked, I said, you know, we can stream from anywhere. And, you know, I can stream from anywhere if you give me, you know, time and budget.
Yeah.
You know, like, and he goes, how much would it take to stream from the moon? And I was like, off the top of my head, give me a rough budget, $15 billion in 15 years.
It's a little rough. Don't hold me to that.
But I could work on that detail there for you. Yeah. But, you know, the idea is that you just look at it as if, you know, because we really have streamed from, you know, every continent at this point, including Antarctica, which, by the way, is really bad bandwidth. And but the
how do you get more bandwidth to Antarctica?
You can't. The channels are 1024 up. So you just there's a 1024 uplink from there.
1,024
kilobits. So it's really small.
It's a megabit?
It's like 15 frames a second. And
lay more cable. Got to lay more cable.
Yeah, yeah, there's no fiber to. Going to space.
And now then, that it's melting, it should be easy. We have people move in. And
yeah, exactly. Someone's got to get around to. You know, it turns out it's really expensive to run fiber across the.
Watch the new screensavers from yesterday. It was a lot of fun. We did some really fun things, including began the building of the ultimate VR gaming machine. But that LIGO thing, it's right at the beginning. You know, what's amazing is that Albert Einstein kind of created this in his mind, you know, as somebody's saying in the chat room, with pencil and paper.
Yeah.
And 100 years later, this is kind of the last piece in every respect. Everything about the general theory of relativity and the special theory of relativity have been experimentally proven. And now this, 100 years later, is the last piece.
Now, that's what...
That's amazing.
That's what we call vision.
Wow.
he just thought of what was possible. You know what I mean?
Right.
Einstein was just sitting around thinking, like, this would be possible.
Yeah.
And now, like, our capabilities to run those experiments is finally caught up with
it. I want to take you up on this streaming from anywhere, because eventually I want to be able to take this studio, put it on a boat.
Yep.
And I noticed that they are talking now about putting up maritime satellites that have gigabit to anywhere.
And it also just depends on how far away you are from the... We've done streams where, you know, as long as you're within a couple, you know, 10 miles of shore, then we can get really good
connections. Microwave beaming and things like that. Yep. So Error 53, this story was broken by The Guardian, who had a reporter, a freelance reporter, who was covering the refugee crisis in Macedonia. He had an iPhone. He dropped his iPhone. Now, turns out there's no Apple stores in Macedonia. So he got a third party to fix it. And they've replaced the screen and in the process of that replaced the fingerprint reader. All's well and good. His phone's working. He gets home. He gets an offer to upgrade to iOS 9. He does. Boom. The phone bricks with error 53. He cannot fix it. He has to buy a new phone. He's a little irate. Turns out this is exactly what's supposed to happen. In fact, there's been a class action lawsuit over this error 53. Apple says... when you have the fingerprint reader fixed, when you do it at an Apple store, there is a secure store where the fingerprint information, your credit card information is stored. This is paired to the fingerprint reader for what we were just talking about, right? It's secure. If you have to replace the fingerprint reader, we have to repair it. We do this. Third parties do not. Mm-hmm. Probably aren't told how. So we don't feel like your phone is secure anymore. So now we brick it, which seems like it's going a little far. It's not completely clear if Apple bricks it intentionally.
Which they probably do.
Yeah. I mean, you could say, the first thought is that's anti-competitive, right? They don't want you using a third party. So this is Apple's statement. I want to give them the statement, then we can talk about it.
Sure.
This is an Apple spokesperson. We protect fingerprint data using a secure enclave, which is uniquely paired to the Touch ID sensor. When iPhone is serviced By the way, we know this is an Apple employee because they call it iPhone, not the iPhone. When iPhone is serviced by an authorized Apple service provider or Apple retail store for changes that affect the Touch ID sensor, the pairing is revalidated. This check ensures the device and the iOS features related to Touch ID remain secure. That all seems sensible, right? Without this unique pairing, a malicious Touch ID sensor could be substituted, thereby gaining access to the secure enclave. When iOS detects the pairing fails, Touch ID, including Apple Pay, is disabled, so the device remains secure. That seems fine. She adds, when an iPhone is serviced by an unauthorized repair provider, faulty screens or other invalid components that affect the Touch ID sensor could cause the check to fail if the pairing can't be validated. With a subsequent update, like to iOS 9, or restore, additional security checks result in an error 53 being displayed. If a customer encounters an unrecoverable Area 53, we recommend contacting Apple support. That's Apple's only statement so far. Many people are reporting this bricking. My question is, Apple, why don't you just turn off the enclave, turn off, you know, Apple? This is what Samsung does. They have a similar situation. Mm-hmm. They turn off Samsung Pay. Some movie things won't work because they're concerned about piracy.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that it sounds, I mean, what I'm not clear about with that is whether you can somehow take it back to Apple and pay them to do whatever they need to do to at least get your phone to work again. I think that, I mean, I do think it's very important that they keep that secure because I think that there's a huge future in that. And so
that's really what we were talking about earlier, right?
Anything in between, I think, makes sense. I think that they probably could have communicated it a little bit more clearly. I think that's one of the big problems is not letting people know that if you take it somewhere else, we're going to brick your phone. I wonder whether there is so much security in that enclave that you can't run the phone. You know, like it's not just the fingerprint, it's not just Apple Pay, but it's all kinds of security measures that are within the phone all got put into this one little box that makes it very difficult for the phone to run at all. You know, because there's a lot of things we do that require our passcode, like logging into the phone. So is all of that sitting inside of that enclave so that it can, you know, be secure? And if it is, then it would be very hard to run the phone. But it seems like there's got to be some kind of fix that you could at least upgrade or have Apple replace your touch sensor and the whole section to, you know, to make that work. I mean, it may not be free. I think that obviously as a user, it'd probably be useful just to go to Apple or an authorized, you know.
I should point out Mac Rumors says they've heard from a retail source some Apple stores have received the go-ahead from Apple to replace third-party screens to resolve the issue. So it may be resolvable.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that you have to take it back to the Apple store.
It'd be my guess this is not what Apple intended.
No. I can see why they do it. And I think they just have to be clear of how they're going to fix it when it happens.
The lawyer in the class action lawsuit says no materials we've seen from Apple ever show a disclosure that your phone would self-destruct if you download new software onto it. If Apple wants to kill your phone under any set of circumstances and for any reason, it has to make it crystal clear to its customers before the damage is done. And that's fair too.
No, I think that is fair. Yeah. Fair point.
Yep. I think this is one of those like law of unintended consequences things. Right? I think they're trying to make it secure device. They were trying to, you know, make sure people couldn't get in there and fiddle it and bypass the security mechanisms. But in doing that, they've, you know, bricked a lot of people's phones who are legitimately just trying to fix a broken screen or, you know, having to, you know, their home button isn't working. Sometimes those home buttons give out, right? And so sometimes it's the cable that goes.
Well, and that's the point. It could just be the screen, not the home button, but because they're paired.
Yeah, 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 exactly. So yeah, Apple certainly should be, and their response to it should have been better as well.
This is typical. These companies take a while to, this just happened this week. I wouldn't
really
be surprised.
They got to get all their ducks in a row before they answer. Yeah. And, you know, worst case scenario, if something bad would have happened, like if somebody went and bought a yacht off somebody's phone or something like that, then everybody would be boohooing about that.
Right.
Like, oh, people have been robbing me and, you know, they froze my accounts and I lost my dog and my sister left me. And like, you know, all the weird stuff that could happen when your finances get jammed up. So
well, confidence,
safe than sorry.
Yeah. Confidence is like everything when it comes to the fingerprint process and
yes.
Apple Pay. And yep. So I'm sure that Apple will be willing to do whatever it needs to do to make and sure that nothing ever gets in between that.
Mistakes are made. Maybe they didn't want to brick it. Maybe they just wanted something. Because, well, here's another mistake. Do not do this.
Oh,
if you set your iOS, your 64-bit iOS device, which is all the recent iPhones, if you set the date to January 1st, 1970, it bricks your phone.
Ouch.
Should I do it?
You should.
No. You're a grown man. They can't stop.
I'm a grown man. I can do anything I want.
Do it.
Let's see it, Leo. Let's see it. Let's do it. Do it, man.
It takes a while to do.
Yeah, because you have to scroll back.
Yeah.
I mean, let me see. First of all, I go to general and I go to date. Right.
You backed up your phone.
Oh, backup schmack up.
It's going to be bricked.
It's good.
Don't set time automatically.
You're talking to a man with 32 iPhones. What's
no? I don't have any other iPhones. This is my only iPhone.
Just let me grand.
But good Lord, it's going to take me forever. Look at this. I'm going back in time. Holy.
Don't you have assistants to scroll for you?
I need a oh, intern, come here and scroll for me.
Leo, I'm going to save you.
$1,000.
Can I just go to the date?
No, I'm going to save you.
What?
So here, let's just watch the video of some other guy doing it.
You don't really need to go.
Your phone.
Yeah, keep pretending this is me. I'm just going to keep scrolling here. I'm scrolling back. Man, this is going to take forever. I think I'm back to 2002 now. Going on. I just got to get to January 1st, 1970. Holy cow. I'm back to 1988 now. Oh, man.
I've hired school.
Oh, man. You know what we need is that picture from Citizen Kane of the calendar pages flying off.
There you go.
1977. I'm almost there. I'm in the right decade. Oh, man.
Okay, so now it's
January 1st.
Boom.
It's got to go back 12, 1 p.m.
Yep.
Boom, boom, boom.
Dun, dun, dun. Set that date. What's happening?
He's going to take it back to the home screen.
Yeah.
He's going to put it on standby.
You stand by it. You turn it off. Or you just stand by it.
Oh, I mean, you shut it down.
Swipe it off.
And then.
Okay. And now?
He's going to reboot it.
Live.
So this, by the way, is the Unix zero date. This is when Unix was invented in 1969. They said the world will begin January 1st, 1970. And all time on Unix systems, and by the way, the iPhone is a Unix system, will be the number of seconds from January 1st, 1970. So basically, you're setting the time to zero. Yeah.
And that's all you'll get.
Zero is never a good thing.
And that's it.
Wasn't this supposed to happen in 2000 when everything was supposed to crash?
Now, if you stupidly did this... Which you just saved me because I was going to do it.
This device too, right? You paid like $1,100 for this.
Yeah.
Device,
oh, yeah. Right? It's more than $1,000 for this stupid thing. If I had done it, the only reason I would consider it is because if you just let it die, if you let the battery die, which of course you can't take the battery out, so you just have to let it die, apparently it will wake up and it'll be okay. It'll be a little groggy. It may say, I just saw this movie, Rocky One. Oh, it was so good. But other than that...
The Beatles broke up?
Oh, let it be!
Some reports are that if you leave the phone on for 5 hours, it may come back. May.
Come on, you stopped me. This would have gone viral had I done it. The only thing that stopped is it took... I don't want to spend all day doing that.
Again, we got people for that, Uncle Leo. We got people for that.
All right, so don't do that. That's enough. But the point, the reason I bring that up is that's the kind of bug. I bet you this Era 53 is a similar thing where you just—it's a dumb bug, but
again, it's dumb until somebody's life gets messed up with their finances. Again, it's dumb until something like that happens. And once that happens, oh, the hubbub and crying and journalists are going to be writing, "How could Apple let this happen? We can't try." Like, no, brick their phone, go back in the store, get it fixed, because one person. Overgrandizing the financial problem that they went through. You know, somebody who I've traveled international, I've had my accounts frozen. It's annoying.
I'm sure the genius could fix it. He would just unplug, open it up, unplug the battery.
I was getting my little setup at the office up, and you know, my Skype TX box is not working. And I was talking to someone, and I said, oh, yeah, Microsoft did something. They ran some code or whatever and it unvalidated every Skype Xbox in the world. Like, it just, you know, they just knocked it all out. This is a couple months ago. I was talking to one of our guys because
we were
going to
get this TX box.
No, they're great. They're great. They're great boxes. We have four of them at one of the studios.
How long was it out of commission?
Well, mine was sitting, it was in transport because I was bringing it back to Pittsburgh. It had been sitting there for a couple months. And so mine, I hadn't been using it. But we have other ones in other places. And so I was, but, you know, that's the kind of stuff that happens. Someone hits a button and, you know, poof.
Somebody makes a good point that the Era 53 might have to do with the fact that Apple, if you cannot log into your iCloud account, won't wipe a phone and give it back to you, won't fix it because they don't want thieves to say, oh, can you just wipe this and and I'll use it. So you would have to validate that you were a legitimate owner of that phone before they would fix the fingerprint reader. I'm not sure how
this,
that would.
This Era 53 thing is, you know, it's actually good. It's free advertising for Apple on that their devices are pretty locked down. There's IT managers out there going, see, this is why we, you know, buy Apple devices. is, you know,
that's right. That's what we want. That's the behavior we want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't want people to be able to fake these things.
Here's behavior you don't want. And this is not Apple's fault. Adobe pushed a update to their Creative Cloud Updater program, right? We all use that, right?
Yep.
If you use Photoshop or Lightroom or InDesign or Premiere, you have to have this little Creative Cloud thing that runs in the background. They pushed an update out for reasons that aren't completely clear. That update deletes the alphabetically first file in the root directory. Just deletes it. For no reason. And the only reason we found out about this is because Backblaze, which is an online backup service used by a lot of Apple users,
has
a folder, a file in the root folder called a dot, I think it's dot BT. And
typically,
vol,
you wouldn't see the you wouldn't see the file that it's deleting. So a lot of people probably have had the file deleted and not.
Well, they're it's a hidden file.
Right.
So, because it starts with a dot. So, .bzvol is critical to the operation of Backblaze, and that's why people found out. They call them Backblaze. My Backblaze stopped working, and I don't know. Smart guy at Backblaze figured it out. Here's the other problem, that if you don't have Backblaze, in most normal Macs, the lowest, the first thing alphabetically is .documentrevisions v-v100, which stores data required for autosave and version history functions to work properly. Not such a good thing to have deleted.
No.
So the fix for this, at least until Apple puts out a fix, the fix for this is from Backblaze is to create a new file in your root directory called .adobe don't delete my bzvol. And that will sort higher. It's easy to do if you have a terminal. I showed this on the new screensavers. You type cd backslash, it'll take you to the root directory.
Now, is dot higher than space?
I don't know. You can't start a file with space.
Yeah, you can.
How do you start a spot with face? Space. Space, touch.
That's higher than space. I think that's
right. Is dot higher than space?
Well, I'm going to do it this way. So you could create a file and make it dot That's going to sort higher than anything else, right? And touch, the touch command, if a file exists, will update its date. But if it doesn't exist, it'll create it.
Space will be %20.
It has to be sudo. Sudo touch. Yeah. Sudo touch. .aaa, you've created that file. You got to give it your password because you're not administrator. Boom. And now if I look, I have a file, .aaa, and if I install Adobe.
You've got a backup one. You've got AAA.
I've done this before.
Leo, go on command line. This show's getting crazy.
Well, it's a simple fix. You want another one? I got another one.
It is.
So here's another one. There is an issue with an update, open source updater program called Sparkle.
Yes.
And Sparkle is used by a lot of Mac software to update it. And apparently Sparkle allows insecure connections for updates, which means it wouldn't be too hard for a bad guy, if you're on, let's say, an open Wi-Fi access point, to intercept the Sparkle updater or even to send a fake update to programs that use Sparkle. And put arbitrary bad stuff on your Macintosh. So this has been fixed, I think, by the Sparkle guys. But the problem is, it's hard to update a program if what's broken is the updater. Right? You can't update the updater. So apps that have this problem are going to have to somehow get you an update without using Sparkle. I don't know. It's kind of a catch-22. So anyway, there is an update. If you have, so the most common one, Camtasia uses Sparkle, MicroTorrent, uTorrent uses it, Sketch uses it. The most common one is VLC.
Right.
I think everybody's got VLC on their system. Somebody on the Ars Technica, you want to do some more command line foo? This one you can copy and paste it from Ars Technica. Somebody in the command line has showed you how to figure out if you've got Sparkle in your Macintosh. You run this find command using a grep to look for the Sparkle bundle. And then what you're going to get is you're going to get a list of files that are using Sparkle, and you're looking for, and version numbers, and you're looking for a version number past 1.13. If you have prior to 1.13, which everything on my system does, you're vulnerable. That's fun. More command line foo. This has become the command line show.
Nice.
There's a show for you. The Command Line Show.
I think there is actually a podcast called The Command Line Show. I think so.
Today we're going to talk about grep.
Grep.
It's audio only.
CD tilde, my favorite command.
Audio only.
Yeah, right. There actually is an audio book, an audible book on Command Line. I got to listen to that. Okay. Percent yes. C colon backslash yes. tilde. Anyway, just I don't know. I don't want to make this the Apple bug report.
So all the, by the way, production people, all the ATEM, all the Blackmagic software uses Sparkle.
Oh, yes, that's right. Blackmagic uses it. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Oh, you just did it.
Yeah.
You're looking through. Look at all that stuff. Oh, man. Yeah, none of it's up to date either.
Mm-hmm.
Mac Fun's plugins, a Tonality Pro, which I use as a photographer. A lot of photographers use Mac Fun. Those also have the problem. Which means Trey Ratcliffe's great new HDR app. That's a problem.
Nice. Want to talk about the feds declaring Google self-driving car a driver?
Yeah, I like that. So the Google wrote a... Actually, let's take a break and then we'll do that. I like that one. And then Dr. Dre's doing Apple's first scripted television series. And it has a nude orgy scene in it. Which means we've come a long way since Steve Jobs ran Apple.
The sound Apple. That you're hearing is Steve Jobs rolling in grave.
That's part of the problem that Apple's having.
I agree.
All the dumb stuff that they're doing.
I agree. Nothing wrong with sex. I'm just saying. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace, the place to make your next website. I think Jason Heiner might know a little bit about Squarespace. Just a little bit. So here's why people like Love Jason. It. Yeah, you use it for your Follow the Geeks book, right?
It is. FollowTheGeeksBook.com. Hosted on Squarespace from the very beginning, day one.
The reason people use Squarespace is it's the best hosting out there. You cannot bring a Squarespace site down. Everybody go to FollowTheGeeksBook.com right now. Doesn't matter. The site will not even slow down because the second part of it is you're using the software for the site design that is based on the hosting. They're tightly integrated, so it's kind of miraculous. When traffic ramps up at a site, the hosting software automatically gives you more resources, CPU and memory. It just all happens automatically. So everybody can go right now to any Squarespace site, and you cannot bring it down. Leoville.com, my blog, is on Squarespace. Nice. The nice thing is, and I think you probably discovered this, you can make a beautiful website. So, for instance, you wanted to put that Times Square picture that you just got a couple of days ago on your cover page, and you did.
Yep.
And that's so cool. And Squarespace makes that easy. In fact, the cover page is a great thing for somebody who just needs like a presence on the web. In every business, you got to have a presence on the web. But it could also be if you're a photographer, your portfolio, or an artist. If you're a musician or a band, Squarespace has templates designed just for you with where you could sell your music. You can show concert dates, lots of pictures. They're all beautiful, and they all represent your aesthetic. You start with the Squarespace templates. The best designers, the best engineers make those. But then you make them your own with just a few clicks, and that's what's cool. They're all mobile responsive. That means you don't have a separate mobile site. Your site looks good on every size screen automatically. They all have e-commerce. Squarespace Commerce is the only platform that lets you make your shopping cart look like your website. It's not some separate, you know, appendage hung off your website. It's integrated in. You get a free custom domain name with your purchase. Great support. It's fun to work with. They have a developer platform if you want to get super geeky, but you don't have to. I love Squarespace, even for like special one-off sites. We found that a lot of our listeners have multiple Squarespace sites, like for a wedding or a baby or a special event. You can quickly make a site. I always use your example, Alex. If you go to a restaurant, it probably doesn't happen anymore, but you'd go to a restaurant, they don't have a website.
Made them one.
By the time the meal is over, they've got a site.
No, I made them one. I was like, you need a website. Yeah. Well, like, I can't find your store. And they were like, well, it's really complicated. And I was like, eating food and
not
and,
hard.
We're redoing our website because we haven't touched it for a long time. It's on Squarespace now, but and I'm playing with it and I'm just like, oh, these new tools. You know, like, you know, and,
yeah,
and
I know.
So it's really awesome.
You know,
it is.
You don't have to worry about security updates because they do that for you. You get new features all the time. It's just all automatic. And it's just great.
And we did a bunch of custom coding with ours on top of it. That's one thing you can do in Squarespace. You can, you know, of course, you can use all the WYSIWYG stuff, but you can also put stuff in. But now most of the stuff that we did custom is all stuff that you can just do.
Yep.
You know, just
it also integrates beautifully with other sites and services. Is one of the things I really like. You know, Squarespace is has been a great platform. I dig it. I've dug it for a long time. I think I first learned about Squarespace on Twit too, by the way, long time ago.
I think, you know, I know Squarespace, every podcast in the world is now sponsored by Squarespace, but I think we were the first. We certainly helped put them on the map. Squarespace.com.
Yeah. Part of their narrative, I think, was like they sort of took this big risk and
advertised. We were very grateful, and I know many others are. Offer code TWIT, you'll get 10% off Squarespace. You should. Dr. Dre, of course, a friend of Apple, he sold his company, Beats, for some billions of dollars, making him the first billionaire rap star. He continues to work with Apple. Now, everybody and their brother is doing scripted TV series. Netflix really showed with House of Cards that this is an opportunity. Screw Hollywood. If you've got money, you can do it yourself.
Right.
So, according to The Hollywood Reporter, and this is an exclusive from The Hollywood Reporter a couple of days ago, Apple's making its first original television show, Vital Signs, a dark, semi-autobiographical drama. Now, we've seen Dr. Dre's autobiographical drama, right? Oh, wait a minute. No, he was Dre's part of Straight Outta Comedy. He was with NWA, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I confuse these rap stars.
Well, Ice Cube had more to do with the writing and the production and all that stuff. Than
and Eazy-E. Don't forget Eazy-E. He does not come off well in that movie, I might add.
I'm talking about as far as the movie's concerned. Ice Cube was the architect.
Oh, he produced it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Most of that stuff.
Yeah. Dre liked it, though, right?
I'm sure he did. He got a check and played the music.
And he comes off well in it.
Very much.
He comes off very well in it, I think. As does Ice Cube.
He makes a lot of money. You got to come off well when you're doing good for yourself.
Yeah. So, Dre is starring in and executive producing this 6-episode TV show, Vital Signs, bankrolled by Apple, will likely be, according to The Hollywood Reporter, an exclusive on Apple Music.
Yes.
And it's not clear whether Apple TV, the iTunes Store, or other Apple platforms, or even a traditional television distributor will be involved, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Apple and Dre declined to comment. Those who have seen descriptions of the show say its build is semi-autographical, each episode focusing on a different emotion.
And I don't buy into this at all. Let me just say.
And how Dre's character deals with it. I would much prefer the 10 crack commandments or something like that. I think that'd be a good.
First of all, his autobiography, he was the one guy in that group that was a DJ, a singer, a dancer.
Did it all.
He wore sparkly suits.
Yeah.
He had a family that was taking care of him for the most part. Like, he lived in the hood, but he wasn't living that hood life. And he was one of the biggest pretenders in that group. So, first of all,
Are you saying he wasn't gangsta?
No, he was not. And he flipped the switch to go be in the band and whatever. He's not that guy. Like, the guy that is NWA, he's not that guy. There were other guys in that group that were that guy more so than him.
Yeah.
He was not, quote-unquote, about that life. So for him to tell me dark tales about his life from when he DJ'd and did sparkly
and then I got a blister on my thumb from scratching all night.
And Apple just, I feel like they're throwing money at the wrong thing to start this ship off, because
it's their buddy.
If it doesn't do well, then they're like, oh, well, it's not, I don't know.
I don't know if it's the end of the world. I mean, Netflix took a while to ramp up. House of Cards was not the first thing that they did. Wasn't Lillehammer one of the...
I think officially this is the last year for Lillehammer, I think.
I like it, but it's not, you know, it's not genius.
No.
So you can stumble. Amazon has made some really bad Amazon originals. Transparent was brilliant, but
I mean, for content creators though, I think this is the golden age. I mean, if Apple gets
money.
Into this, YouTube is just, you know, YouTube originals are just coming out on Red. You know, you have, well, not just Red, but YouTube originals are coming out. The you know, Apple going into it, you have Netflix, Amazon, all these guys are already, you know, knee deep in it. If you have an idea of something you want to make, this is the time to do it. I think that the other thing is that's really interesting is that if they do it only for Apple Music, of course, what this is setting up is we could do this for your band and it could be only on Apple Music. And I think that we would see, you know, again, this is where Apple Music could actually, I mean, beyond all the problems that it has, which is an interface that drives me absolutely crazy. These Taylor Swift only, you know, Taylor Swift was showing one side of original content. Dre shows another side of original content. And using that, that's how you start selling into the music industry.
It's definitely the time of the day to do it. If you got an idea, you could pitch it because 10 people could turn you down, but there's 30 different options right now. So,
yeah. I mean, there's never been more narrative content created ever than right now.
I think that's totally right, Alex. It is good if you're a content creator because it puts all the onus, all the focus is on the people making great content, right? If you make great content, you can sell somebody on the idea. You can do it. Whereas, you know, we're coming out of this era where really distributors controlled this game. And, you know, you needed a big distributor. And the big distributors decided what they wanted, what they were going to show us. And a lot of times what they showed us wasn't that great, which is what led to this sort of bottom-up grassroots movement of content. And now I think you have it in so many places in so many ways, too. What YouTube's doing is amazing, right? There are people building whole business models off of YouTube in smart ways, and from stuff that is like you know, the how-to stuff to people doing full-length movies to people doing, you know, shorts to people doing, you know, music videos, all kinds of things. And so you know, from a video standpoint, from a, you know, whatever your content is, you know, you have the opportunity to do this in ways that just really weren't even possible, were too expensive, you know, even 5-10 years ago.
Actually, tomorrow, Stephen King's 11/23/63 starts on Hulu, another eight-hour miniseries with James Franco and produced by J.J. Abrams, although USA Today gives it 2 stars out of 4 and says, not worth the time travel. Which is kind of good. But back to Dre. It's a half-hour show. Sam Rockwell and Mo McRae will be in it. It's not a comedy, dark drama, no shortage of violence and sex, which is interesting for Apple. I mean, I didn't expect them to go the Disney route, but it's interesting they'd go there. According to The Hollywood Reporter, an episode filming this week featured an extended orgy scene. Sources tell The Hollywood Reporter naked extras simulated sex in a mansion in the Bird Streets neighborhood of Los Angeles' Hollywood Hills. Dre was not there, but his wife, Nicole Young, was, according to one insider. Hard to keep that stuff quiet in Hollywood, I imagine. It's also being produced by Robert Munich, who he's going to write all 6 episodes, executive produce it. He was co-executive producer and writer for Empire.
Well, maybe it'll be semi-okay.
Empire was good.
Mm-hmm. Empire is like super fluffy, so that
yeah, it's a soap opera. Kind of, it's
yeah,
a soap
they go
opera.
Dark with that, then it, you know what I mean? That might
yeah.
be okay.
Yeah. I think very interesting to hear. I mean, we've been waiting for this. We talk about this all the time about Break Weekly. We've been waiting for Apple to. Well, you said buy Hollywood, but you know,
I just said buy Disney.
Buy Disney, yeah. I don't want to make this the Apple show. There are a lot more Apple stories, including this conversation.
Can we talk about Twitter?
Yeah, but hold on. One more, okay? I'm sorry. Apple was a lot in the news this week. Because there was articles by Walt Mossberg on The Verge and, you know, others about Apple's software being crap. And then I thought it was very interesting because John Gruber had Eddie Q and Craig Federighi, Apple executives, on the show. And kudos to Gruber. I mean, when you get an executive like that, it's hard to challenge him. He said, you know, what about this Apple software is crap? And the response he got was so tone deaf, it makes me very nervous. Essentially, I think it was Craig said, oh, you know, people just don't like new stuff. We're trying a lot of stuff, this new Photos, Apple Music, and it's just people who don't like new stuff and not really taking to heart the criticism that they should, that iTunes is crap. I'm sorry, Apple Photos is horrible. I lost my data several times. This is not great software. And I would at least expect Apple to say, yeah, okay, well, we're going to make it better. Instead, they said, no, there's nothing wrong with it. They're doing great software. Literally, we're doing great software. It's just so different. People have to get used to it. Same thing happened with Final Cut. Same thing happened with iMovie. They just have to get used to it. That's not the issue. And there goes my interview with Eddie Q and Craig Federighi. All right. Now we'll talk about Twitter.
Apple does not care about your feelings.
No, they don't.
I was gonna pull a Kanye West and George Bush, but I don't want people to jump on me and not understand the joke or the reference.
You want me to set it up for you? That kind of takes the sting out of it, doesn't it?
Yeah, they get it. But Apple does. I mean, that's the problem. Like, a lot of the things they're doing right now, they really don't care. But they're going to start caring when that bottom line starts creeping in. I mean, they just made record profits, but Samsung is selling units. Like, they are moving units out of the store. So, you know, at one point, somebody's going to wake up and say, oh, well, you really don't like, well, okay, well, watch this, and then they'll fix stuff.
Yeah.
But until they get some kind of fear in them, they don't care what 1 or 2,000 million people have to say about their product, because it's free. Oh, you don't like iPhoto? It's free. Pay for something better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's some Apple software that I like a lot. I mean, I use
Final Cut. You use, right?
I use Final Cut 10.
Yeah.
I think the Keynote is the standard. If you're going to do
Keynote
a presentation, if you want to do a presentation in front of a lot of people, there is nothing.
But that was written a long time ago and has not been much updated.
No, it gets updated. There's a lot of iWork.
Fix something if it ain't broke.
No, not iWork in general, but Keynote gets updated. And then Numbers, I think, if you're not doing big numbers, it's so much better than Excel.
I feel like those are hits from yesteryear, right?
Yeah, but they still work well.
But you got to then look at iTunes, which has just gotten worse and worse and worse.
Why do you have
to interact with iTunes? iTunes has always been a POS, but I do think that that the new Apple TV interface, I actually like it. The remote is
is insane because you hit it by accident.
I thought that I'd always want a Bluetooth remote and not have it be RF or not RF but infrared. But the problem with that one is it gets in under the cushions
and then you sit down and you can't figure out why when you sit down it rewinds and when you stand up it stops and you don't know why.
You're like, oh, it's around here somewhere.
The remotes, this is where their design sense is, you know, kind of works against them. Yeah. The remotes are so small, like my kids lose these things all the time. It drives me crazy.
And my watch.
That's what I do. I end up using my phone instead of the remote. One, because I barely touch it and it's like, stop. You know,
here's my big suggestion for Apple. And I hope someone from Apple's listening is what they need for that remote. Is they need a little buzzer in there that you can activate with your phone. People would go, that would be like the number one feature is so that I pull out my iPhone, find my, basically find my phone, but find my remote. Be awesome. That's all I'm saying.
Alex, when's the last time you played a game on your Apple TV with that remote?
Oh, God.
Last week.
Really?
My son and I played this funky game where you fly through the little gears and you get cut up into little things and you go slow and get fat.
I was about to yell at you, but now I can't. So enjoy the remote. just use your phone. But if you actually do use it to play games, you need that remote. So
you can use it. You can use a Bluetooth controller.
I just didn't know which controllers, and it never lists.
I bought the Blue Steel or whatever. No, that's
does that one work with the
Blue Steel?
It doesn't
Steel
list series. Apple TV on it. Like it always says iOS and everything else, and doesn't say Apple TV.
Yeah, any iOS controller will work.
Right. Steel series, Leo.
Steel. It's not blue. It's just Steel.
Yeah.
But no, I have that at home. I'll lend it to you. Steel series Nimbus.
Yep. I do think the software is pretty decent, though. It's the best software they've done in a while. I think the Apple TV is clean. It's easy to navigate. You know, you can figure out.
Hey, at least they have a store. We have now, they're, thanks to not us, but the developers out there who love the show, 5 Twit apps on the App Store.
Yeah.
5.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Nice.
Well, and it's really allowing, it's making it much easier for all these, admittedly, most of them are screwing it up completely, like CVS. But most of these apps, you know, you're now able to start doing, apps for everyone, and it's allowing those industries. Because we don't have cable TV. We just have a really, really fast internet connection. I disconnected my TV from the internet so that my TV's not allowed to talk to the internet over wireless or wired, because my kids would leave the interface up. And I was afraid it was going to burn in. It's an expensive TV. It won't, because the TV, when it's left in its interface, on a Vizio,
doesn't
go to the screensaver.
Oh, that's
and it'll burn in. And it does burn in. I don't care what anyone says. It still burns in. And so the nice thing about the Apple TV is you get these nice little flyovers that it immediately cuts to. So I don't want them using anything else. Now, I have a Roku and a Chromecast and the Apple TV all hooked into it.
Roku has a screensaver as well.
Yeah, the Roku does fine, but I just didn't want the TV's the only one that doesn't.
I have to say, Siri, as much as I'm not a fan of Siri in general, it is nice to be able, I use this all the time to say, skip back 3 minutes, or my favorite, what did he just say? and then it skips back 15 seconds, turns on closed captioning, shows you the clip again with closed captioning, then turns it off. That is
really nice. Leo, have, I don't like the search, though. Sorry, the search.
Search is funky.
I find shows all the time because
but it's nice to be. Some things
I mean,
is nice.
I have a hard time with it.
If you bought it,
I have a much easier time with Amazon Fire TV.
The Apple search is very literal.
I try all of them.
Yeah, it's very literal. You can't say I want action movies featuring.
I had this problem where I'd have with Apple TV. If you bought an episode off of Apple TV of something that you wanted to try or whatever. And you go back to that episode because that was like previously watched or whatever. You can't get to the rest of the series. Like you can't. Like there's no way to get to it.
Yeah.
So then what you end up having to do
is go search.
You know, find this series, and then it takes you to the series.
Frustrating.
There's like a dead end there where you're like,
no, I had that problem too.
You're
watching Fargo. I had it back up. So what were you going to say, Owen? I'm sorry.
I was just telling you, you didn't hear me because you didn't have your hearing aid in. And I said, next time you watch a show, make sure you have your hearing aid in.
I use both hearing aids all the time.
If you set yourself up properly, then maybe you'd be able to hear the episode.
It's not my problem. It's people mumble these days.
I've been thinking about that, Apple.
There are a lot of mumblers out there. You're a mumbler, too, you know. You're talking like they're all damn untethered about the saying.
Speaking that hippity hoppity.
Hippity hoppity. Bop with the bop.
Are you done with Apple?
I'm done with Apple.
It's over. You bring up Apple one more time.
I'm D-U-N with Apple.
I'm having your mic cut.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave, and you just take over right now. And it's your turn.
If you had to go to the bathroom, Uncle Leo, you could just go.
Getting old now, and the catheter's not working like it used to.
It happens with the elderly. I understand.
Yeah.
Let's fix Twitter while Leo's gone because he can't fix it.
What are you talking about with Twitter? Twitter's good. I like the new Twitter. Don't you like Twitter's the new Twitter?
Twitter's trying to fix everything and algorithmate and automate.
Well, now they kind of backed down. They didn't say they're doing an algorithm. They're just doing like more of that while you were away, here's what happened stuff. I like that.
Yeah.
What I'd like to know, it does sound like, though, that it's the more popular ones are going to jump up on the top that make you. I don't understand whether you're going to actually be watching those, if those are actual people you're following, or whether you're going to get tweets that are just popular, which is fine. My only question is are they going to tell us which ones are which? Like, is it going to be the first five are the most popular, and then it just goes back to a regular feed? I'm really okay with that. As long as it, you know, because I don't mind it trying to figure out that, oh, maybe these are five, because really, once you start following more than about 100 people, it's kind of mass chaos. You know what I mean? Like, as far as...
I follow 2,456 people.
I do about 500.
That's too many. I'm following 700 people.
So you're going to miss a lot of stuff. So I kind of get that. I really wish someone would let the user play with that algorithm a little bit. Like, say, when a certain number of people that I'm following like something, show it to me. Or, you know, like it'd be great for us to have some tools to kind of play with that. It'd probably give them a lot of feedback, too.
I also want them to quit messing with my live feed. Like, the live feed I want is the live feed. Like, that's Twitter's killer. That's Twitter's secret sauce, is the live internet. Twitter's the live internet.
But I'm saying, if you could have a section that has five, if they're not messing with it, if they just had, here's five things that you miss that are popular that are right on the top, and then the rest of it's just the live feed, it would be fine.
Alex, wait, hold on a second.
I like it. I just want it as its own tab. You're away, as its own tab.
I agree.
Like, get rid of that dumb moments thing. And make the while you're away its own tab. I'll look at that thing all day. I'll probably scroll down and look at all kinds of stuff on there. I just don't want it on my live feed.
Everybody here just said how much they dislike iTunes, right? Twitter is starting to look like iTunes to me, and it needs to get back to looking like Twitter to me. Like, so if I want to see the top five, they don't have a good track record of doing that. Again, moments is nothing but advertisements. It's not moments. Because when I see hashtags blowing up about things going on, it's not what's
in
my moments.
Like something like
and then when it comes into moments, it's 2 days late. That's not a moment. That was yesterday.
But isn't
so they're not doing it right. And they still show me stuff from 5 hours ago, like underneath my first five or ten. So now you want to put it at the top. I want live. I came on there to see what I'm talking about. Donald Trump. I want to get in there and start yelling at people. I want to see what everybody's talking about. I don't want to scroll down to the bottom, get back to the midsection, click the moment, then go through the tunnel to get to where I'm supposed to get to. It's too much.
Yes.
But it is true, though, isn't it? And there's nothing like this, that watching the NBA dunking derby or the Republican debate last night, on having Twitter by your side makes that so much more fun, don't you think?
It makes it real. You can't yell at people on Facebook.
I know, and I love O-Doctor. I will follow. I follow you because I love to see what you're going to say.
I get tweets when I don't tweet about what's going on that's important. People are like, you're not watching the debate. Why aren't you yelling at people? Get on here and start yelling about the debate. And you can have that free-flowing, click into a hashtag, see something that some Russian mom in Ukraine tweeted about it because she's watching it on the internet. Like, it's live. Facebook is just a whole bunch of angry people reacting to stuff that they saw 2 days ago. And I know Twitter's not having a whole user explosion, but I just assume that all the smart people have stayed there, and there's not that many smart people left to sign up.
Well, and I think that, you know, you can also have all these. The great thing about Twitter and with the GOP debates, for instance, yesterday is we got into a conversation. I wasn't interested in the debate itself, but I was really interested in the fact that the mics were huge. I don't know if you saw how big those. The mics were like the size of, you know, small acorns.
Size matters.
And, yeah, in this case, they do. They're sure. I'm pretty sure they're sure WL185s, and they're really big.
The Democratic debate, they kept peeking out. Well, those little mics was like. It kept popping. The mics were so hard.
Well, you can see what they, you know. Anyway, so there's a whole bunch of conversations about the mics, you know, and but you can't have that because I don't want to talk about the politics of it on Twitter, especially. I'm just more interested in the technical aspects. So there was comments about the background, comments about the cameras, but that's the thing is you can do that live. So I mean, the live feed is there's something immediate and. I think transient. I mean, like the fact that it's I think that there is a power to Twitter that it is the live feed and that it will go away quickly. You know, and I think that that was,
Snapchat.
It's one of the things I like about, it's also one of the things I liked about when I started doing Meerkat was the idea that it can't be saved. It's just like, it's going to be, I'm going to turn it on, I'm going
to
wander around.
Meerkat. Yeah.
There's people out there still using it. The saving part did not make me excited about it.
Yeah, I want Twitter. I mean, Snapchat has kind of existed because Twitter has stumbled, you know, and you know is not being the live internet, not embracing who it is. Like Twitter is trying to be Facebook, right? With this, and there are good things to what they do, but like I said, put it in its own tab in terms of the while you're away, this non-linear stuff. But also in its business model, right? It's trying to be an advertising space. It's not very good. It doesn't know enough about its users the way Twitter does. Like its value is in live and its value is in its data. Like it has all this live data on sentiment of what's happening. And this is a treasure trove of data for governments, for businesses.
I hear this all the time, but why hasn't somebody bought it? I mean, they're in play, aren't they? Because of their low stock price. And we 2 weeks ago, we were talking about this, and Calacanis said, in fact, we even heard Mark Andreessen and Silver Lake were looking at it. You've got to think Google has looked at it and turned it down by now. Apple, maybe? I mean, but why hasn't it been? So this is an article from the New Republic. I really liked it. It says, you can't kill Twitter even if it dies Navneet Alang. And this is the quote that I think is important. Twitter is still the best answer to the question, what's happening in the world right now?
Yes.
And no matter what else, it's that. And it will continue to be that, I think, right?
It is the live internet.
It's the live internet.
Last night during the debate, not about politics, but the favorite moment of my life was when Jeb comes on. He's like, Donald Trump has insulted my family. My dad was the greatest, blah, blah, blah. My mother, I was born 63 years ago, and she is the strongest, most powerful woman and then Donald Trump's like, yeah, your mom should be running. And I went to Twitter, and it was like, yo, he just said your mom should be. And like thousands of people just like laughing at the same thing. You're in one moment like, yo, he just called out for your mom over you. Like, it's just amazing. You can't have that on anywhere else. Not even Snapchat. You can't go, Snapchat, your mom.
No. Twitter feels like a conversation.
Like thousands of people in that moment right with you, and you feel so good. Like, it's just amazing.
I guess technically Snapchat's similar. Twitter feels like a conversation. It feels much more intimate and real and happening right now than any other platform out there.
They can't sell Twitter for the same reason earlier when you guys were talking, and I was really quiet because all three of you were on the we are the world, we are the children, and technology saving Earth. I was real quiet. I didn't say one word. And that's the thing that goes on with the bubble. You guys are so happy, but we also downplay and downtrodden everything. Who wants to buy something when every dude with a laptop is writing, well, Twitter's going to die next week, and I don't understand. And then the speculation comes from Wall Street because they don't know nothing about the internet, and they devalue a company, and all these games get played because in that world, it's either technology is going to save us all or technology is going to destroy us all. And I live on the latter side.
Both are true. No, both are true. Both are true.
I mean, it's just rough.
You can have both. I think both are true.
That's why I let you guys have your moment. I did not take you down. I let all of you enjoy. All three of you spoke.
Oh, come on. Owen Bubble Burster Stone. That's your new name. Owen BB Stone.
Hey, I let you have it.
And the same process.
I'm just saying, Google overfishing and then tell me how we're going to build all this technology when we don't have any fish in 50 years and the world falls apart.
Hey, if the world falls apart, we'll pay attention to that. But until then, I got Twitter.
I know.
Well, at least we'll know it's happening live.
I think we'll see it on Twitter first.
That's right.
Oh, my God. The world just falling apart.
Where?
Right here.
Getting a lot of sunburn.
But I think it was cool what you said there, Leo, because it touched on when those guys first built it. I remember, they talked about the fact that, it was their status update. They were inspired to make Twitter by the fact that some of them were just leaving clever status updates in their IM chat. Right?
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's what inspired them. And they're like, you know what? What if we had a service that instead of like us making clever updates
with just each other?
Yeah, we just put them someplace. And then if we all shared them, and they're like, the world's kind of a little bit less lonely place when you can see what other people are thinking. And of course, it evolved from there. But that, that is the core of the idea. Like, what's happening right now? What are people I'm interested in care about, thinking about things? And that live internet is still the core of what it is. And I think that if they stick to that, if they get back to the fact that they are the live internet and they have this data set that nobody else in the world has, and they can monetize the crap out of that, they can sell it, build tools that help people get it.
They've never figured out how to do that. And frankly, I hope they don't, because because it should be anarchic. It should be anarchic. It should not be... Oh, that's what's wrong with Facebook, Google+, they're data mining it. Don't data mine it. Just let it be. Let Twitter be Twitter. Let Twitter alone.
That data is huge, though.
You need money, first of all, so stop. People got to.
They got enough money for 412 years.
Listen, nobody has enough money. This is America and it's capitalism. And let me finish my point. Stop talking to me about money. We need more money. Everybody needs more money. You need more money. Leo, stop making any more money for the rest of the year. Send me the rest of all your paychecks.
I'm getting real close to doing that. It's called retirement, Owen J.J. Stone.
Yeah. Listen to me. You threw it on track. I'm saying Twitter also needs to embrace itself. I don't like saying it because I feel weird saying it, but there's a thing that's called Black Twitter, and they generate so many comments and content.
No, it's amazing. It's a whole subculture on Twitter.
And Twitter ignores them. They need to embrace them.
No, they should ignore them, because if they pay attention to them, it'll change it. Black Twitter, we shouldn't even say the words. Just let it be.
Okay. Well, letting it be doesn't let people know about it, because white people feel weird.
But if you're black, you know about it. Actually, it's probably not everybody.
But you say Black Twitter, people go and type in blacktwitter.com. They don't know what you're talking about.
Well, and by the way,
Twitter doesn't.
I'm glad you brought it up, because I can't bring it up. I'm glad you brought it up, but I'm very aware of it. There's an apps. I use the code word urban. There's a very much of an urban subculture available on Twitter. I bet there's other subcultures there too that we just don't know about.
Oh yeah,
and more people would love.
There's
to
probably
be a
gay
part of
Twitter,
it and
right?
And enjoy it.
There's probably furry Twitter.
Everything Twitter,
right?
You gotta promote certain things.
You don't want to shine too much light on that. You want to let it be organically grow.
They won't shine any light on it. It's at the bottom of the ocean, Uncle Leo, with the rest of the non-fish. Well,
and I still think that one of the kind of the original.
Where do
mistakes,
I find Black Twitter? Can I Google that?
The hashtag,
I'm sorry,
right?
Go ahead. I was going to say that I think one of the original mistakes that they made that I think is part of their problem is that they really catered to stars right at the very beginning.
Yeah, it was stupid.
So what happened was that people who had organically built. Yeah. Well, as soon as they had people who had organically built their. I mean, you were. in the top five, number one.
I was number one for like 5 minutes.
I was in the top 100 for like a week.
Yeah.
But the thing is the people had.
Somebody asked me the other day, so Twitter shared some money with you, right? After they made. No. Said, you put Twitter on the map? No.
Yeah. And so the thing is, you had a lot of people that had organically built up all of that following, had done all of that stuff, and then they just started promoting all these stars. And I get the thought process, but it definitely stratified it in a way that I don't think that they'll ever fully recover from, you know, where they really could have had, you know, what YouTube did really well, I think, is that while there's big stars on it, it really built up a culture around the little guy. You know, YouTube has a much more of a culture around the YouTube stars in their world are way bigger than traditional stars. Like when we do online events, and we do a lot of online events, we always tell the people we work with, you're much better off with a YouTube star than a Hollywood star because they're going to bring people.
There's a culture
like,
I do not get.
Oh, I don't.
I do not get PewDiePie. I do not get Annoying Orange. I do not get any of this stuff.
Fred, it's not for you.
Who's it for?
For people okay.
Does your daughter love YouTube? Is she like a Michelle Phan fan?
My daughter is a Netflix fiend and Minecraft fiend. She hasn't gotten on her YouTube dreams yet. But I'm just saying, certain things aren't for you. They're for a certain subculture. And the thing about YouTube stars is they still actually talk to people.
But are they so real stars or are they? I mean, that's my question.
They're making money, Uncle Leo.
No, they're not. YouTube wants you to think they're making money. Five people are making money. Most of them, like Michelle Phan, are making money by selling stuff off-site. That's a myth that people are making money on YouTube. Most people are working in the mines, grinding out videos and making nothing.
Ivory Tower. I know two people right now that live a regular life. They got four kids. They vlog every day. The wife and the husband have quit their job and they play video games and hang out with their kids all day. And no, they're not making millions of dollars, but they're making $150,000
a year.
They're making videos. How much are they sitting at home? They're not again. People are making money. People are getting paid. And it's not just the top 1% of people. Yes, some of those people have more than others, but people are making a regular good living off of YouTube right now.
And it's hard work. In fact, there was an article in the New York Times about a YouTube star who has to work as a waitress because to keep ends together. It's very difficult for her because people look at her and say, you shouldn't be waitressing. What are you doing here?
Like anything else, it takes a fair amount of organization. We end up working because of what we do with a lot of YouTube stars. And they're making money. I mean, I'll tell you one thing. Number one is there's a bunch of them. It's not two. It's not five.
Actually, it was Fusion. I apologize.
A lot of them that are not, again, they're not driving Rolls Royces, but they're all making enough to live fairly comfortably.
Yeah.
And it is real. You know, we were waiting to get in somewhere with one of the YouTube stars, and he's just standing there, and these Japanese tourists were just like super excited to take a picture with him.
But
he is super organized. He knows exactly what he's doing. The thing is that in any industry, whether it's the railroads or iApps, you know, the apps for the iPhone or whatever, it's not the people who purely have talent that are getting rich. It is the people who mix some level of talent.
They get the new media. They understand what's going on.
I mean, you know, you look at like a Justine Ezrick
Justine's done great.
She started.
She works her ass off.
But she worked her. I met her before. I mean, we brought her on to MacBreak.
She had that work ethic.
Whatever. Yeah.
You discovered her.
The way I discovered her, though, was I was at PodCamp. I didn't discover her. I mean, she was.
I remember you coming to me and saying, there's this woman you need to meet because she's an incredible. Yeah. She's going to be a star.
She was going to be a star. I don't think I did it, but when she, I remember we were at PodCamp Pittsburgh and she showed me this magazine. I said, so what did you do on the magazine? You know, and she goes, I did the magazine.
She's a hard-working person, super talented.
But the point is that you know, and she's done fairly well.
People always bring up these handful of great successes, and they exist. But read this. This is from Fusion. Get rich or die vlogging the sad economics of internet fame. It was all so painfully awkward. That night, Brittany Ashley, a lesbian stoner in red lipstick, was at Everly, a popular farm-to-table spot in West Hollywood. The restaurant was hosting BuzzFeed's Golden Globes party. For the past 2 years, Ashley had been one of the most visible actresses on the company's four YouTube channels. With altogether 17 million subscribers, she does videos, bawdy videos with titles like How to Win the Breakup, which rack up millions of views. The awkward part, Ashley wasn't there to celebrate with BuzzFeed. She was there to serve them, not realizing that her handful of weekly waitressing shifts at Everly paid most of her bills. A co-worker from the video production site asked Ashley if her serving tray was a bit. It was not. And I think that this is much more the we always point to, and I think it's unfair to a lot of kids who watch. We point to the handful of YouTubers who work really hard and make some of them make a lot of money. PewDiePie makes reportedly makes $7 million a year. Most of them maybe make six figures, but they're working 90-hour weeks a lot. Are your friends working hard work? I mean, they are if they're going to sustain it.
They're hanging out with their kids and they're playing video games. It's not easy. Nothing's easy. Again, that's entrepreneurial spirit. I just want you to get out of that ivory tower and stop being down on somebody making YouTube videos, because the same thing is podcasting.
I'm not down on it. I just don't think you're going to become rich and famous doing it.
Listen to me. Context. Regular context. There are actors and actresses. There are B-list actors and actresses. There are porn stars. There's a different level for every group that you want to be in and tier. Ask OMG Chad how well he's doing with his YouTube and his Minecraft and his 500,000 views per whatever and his Patreons and his Twitch and everything he's working for. But he's working on his own now and all that kind of stuff. People are making money. No, not everybody's making top-tier money. And people that have top-tier money also might not know how to manage their finances like other people. And that might be part of the story also. Because some people become a big, huge actor and or actress and end up on the street, Uncle Leo. I'm just saying, there's different tiers and levels. Stop being so extreme.
No, you're wrong. You're falling for the... And by the way, this is in Google's interest that people believe this, because they get you to work for free and create a ton of content, which they make a lot of money on. You know who's making money on YouTube? Google's making money on YouTube, not a small handful of people. I think you're falling for Google's propaganda.
But I guess I would
say I'm falling for people that I actually know. I don't talk to anybody at Google. I can't even get them to release my old YouTube account with all my subscribers on it. So I'm not falling for nothing Google selling me. I'm falling for people that I know that make videos and the life that they're living.
If you want to believe the fairy tale, go ahead. It's a fairy tale. And you talked to me a couple of years about how those people are doing.
I know
a lot of YouTube stars, believe me. I know as many as you do. It is not the golden pot at the end of the rainbow.
I'm saying, okay, so what's the average minimum wage right now?
Well, I agree.
What's minimum wage?
If you're working for minimum wage and you have the skills to become a YouTube star, you could do better.
I'm trying to get you in perspective. So if a person is making $50,000 to $100,000 a year, and maybe they were making $30,000 a year at their other job, they're making a lot of money to them. I'm not saying that everybody's getting rich. You keep using words like rich, golden.
A living's fine. A living's fine. But I'm not. But I think you have to work
twice. They're being creative. You're talking about selling the golden dream. I'm not selling the golden dream. I'm selling the reality. Some people are good at what they do. Some people are not.
It's like telling a bunch of high school kids you could be an NBA star.
Well, but everybody can be Twit.
I think when we look at any of these industries, whether it's someone who goes into baseball or football or wants to become an actor or wants to become, you know, start a band or wants to write an app for the iPhone, 99.9999% of them are going to fail. So with all of this stuff, you know, it's going to be, you know, and a handful of them are going to end up in the majors, you know, I think that's the reality with all these talent based.
It's a mistake to think that the majors are mainstream. I don't think that that's necessarily true.
I don't think the majors are mainstream. I think that
you're not a star because you're on YouTube, but if you could cross over like Fred Figglesworth to Nickelodeon, oh, now you're a star. And I think that's also not true.
But I think most of the
that's an old way.
I guess most of the YouTubers that we talk to don't care about crossing over.
Good. That's a big change, because that used to be the goal.
Oh, no, it used to be.
Look at PewDiePie. He's now on the YouTube Red channel, Scare PewDiePie, where they have, you know, big sets. They're spending lots of money to make videos of him getting scared. And you know what? I don't think his audience is all that into it. I mean, it'll be very interesting to see what happens. They're now making feature-length films with groups like Laser Team that most people have not heard of, but YouTube—they're big YouTube stars. We will see. I mean, YouTube has a history of failure. I mean, remember they spent more than $100 million on big channels.
I'm just saying it's all relative. Some people do better than others. Some people do okay. And if you're playing at a lounge bar every week and you still get to have your band,
and of course you could be digging ditches too. There are crap jobs out there.
I think the coolest thing on YouTube is actually the how-to stuff, right? Like, because there's where you can take, some of the best content.
Huge value. Huge value. We have a family member who's a truck repair guy. He goes around in a giant pickup truck, giant Ford F-350, loaded with parts, drives up to tractor trailers that are broken down and fixes them on the road because you can't haul them back.
Right.
Yeah.
He says he watches YouTube videos all the time to learn. He's already doing really well. He knows his stuff, but he watches YouTube videos. How do I fix that?
Well, we got an argument about
amazing.
We got an argument in the office about the proper technique for. And this is a little geeky, but the proper technique for soldering XLR cables. And of course, where do we go? We go to YouTube. And there's like six of them, and all of them have like a million views. We're like, there's a million people, like, or 6 million people that watch videos about wiring XLR cables. I feel so much more special now.
It restores your faith in humanity, right? Realize that many people are doing something like this. But actually, coolly enough, though, if you have a YouTube channel and you're doing that kind of thing, you can then translate that into other stuff too, right?
You have to. I think if you want to make money, you have to sell stuff or... You have to find an extra revenue source. That's not wrong with that, but that's how it is.
Yeah, and that's how you have to approach it. You know, the YouTube, you're right, like to an extent, right? The YouTube star thing is like any hits-based business. You need hits to keep coming in order to keep it going.
That's true.
It's
true. Many businesses, I have to, you know, I don't make money on Twit, but it supports my true money maker, which is shipping in White Castle burgers via truck because there's a huge market. And then I go and we sell them off the back of the truck. And that's where the money. Have I mentioned that business, by the way?
I love those White Castle burgers.
Plug that more. Anyway, good conversation.
Do you have White Castles out there?
No. I wish we did. You do, right?
Yeah, we do.
Man, I love those.
I went to 2 months ago.
I love them sliders.
I've been there forever.
They slide right through you.
You need to ship us some, OJ.
I'll send them overnight. I'll send you a whole truck full. I got $9 in my pocket.
Yeah, $9 buy you 300 burgers. It's such a deal.
It's like the burger Taco Bell. You go in there for like $6, you feed 14 families.
Oh,
like,
it's eighth dinner, 15th breakfast.
Uncle Leo, I still love you.
I love you too, Owen.
Semi-disagree. I'm just saying that, you know, like, you know.
You have a good point. I'm not disagreeing. I am disagreeing with you. But
I'm agreeing with you in general. I'm just saying that some people have a different idea of what stars. Like, case in point, look at me, right? My friend, anytime somebody asks what I do.
I'll never understand how you make a living.
He went out with me to California once because I was hosting a conference. And we were walking down the street, and people were just like, "Oh, doctor!" He's like, "People know who you are."
Yeah,
I'm like, "Yeah, we're at a."
Why is that, oh, doctor? Why do people know who you are?
People know who I was. That's the first thing you ask me. You're like, "Who are you, and how did you get here?" I'm saying, like, to certain people, I'm a star, and I'm like, nobody knows me. My friend's like, "How do all these people know you?" I'm like, "I'm not special, and I don't think I'm special, but people know me, and you wouldn't think so looking at my numbers on the internet." But I'm known well enough in certain circles. You look famous.
I worry about almost a whole generation of kids. I mean, I talk to so many 12-year-olds who say, I'm doing my Minecraft channel. I worry about a whole generation of kids who, it's the same thing in the inner city schools who they think they're all going to be NBA stars.
Isn't that everybody? That's exactly what you just said. Everybody's got a dream, Uncle Leo. And sometimes you wake up from that dream and you go flip these burgers.
I agree. Good to have a dream. But don't let Google see, because Google makes money on this dream. That's my fear. I mean,
the music industry makes money on the dream.
Oh yeah, well, there's another winner that you want to compare.
The thing is, Apple's making lots of money on the dream that my iApp is going to, you know, sell.
Yeah, there's
copies.
Another one.
The bottom line is they provide an opportunity, and
you know who gets rich? You know who gets rich? The rich get richer.
And that's why I'm voting for Bernie Sanders.
And you know how the rich get richer? They prey upon people who want to be rich.
Well, everybody wants to be rich. That's why I was telling you, stop talking about being rich. I love being averagely comfortable. You know, people say to me, I've been offered jobs in major cities. And I'm like, I got friends living out in San Francisco that make $250,000 a year. And every once in a while, they ask me for $500 or $1,000 because they can't afford their rent for some reason.
Yeah.
You know why? Because the cost of living is so high.
Yeah.
I live in the Batcave with my McMansion because it ain't nothing but a thing for me. I got 3,000-square-foot house. I'm paying $1,400 a month for a mortgage. Like, it's nothing. Like, you know, so it's all about what you want.
So you did mention, I don't know how we got in this conversation, that Google got a interpretation from the National Highway Transportation, Traffic Safety Administration about the self-driving cars. And that's where we started, huh? Yeah, who's driving that car? We're going to talk about that in a second. Hey, before we do that, I know who's driving this car, effing done. Jason Cleanthes. You know what, Jason? Let's show a promo.
Previously on Twit.
It's the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine.
Will there be a CD-ROM on the ultimate?
I don't know.
Twit Live Specials.
We're here in San Francisco at TechCrunch 9th Annual Crunchy Awards.
It's the creme de la creme of the industry.
The trick is less about creating a need. There is a desire, but helping schools, helping teachers figure out how to do that, how to offer it in the classrooms.
Know-how.
We've got steampunk goggles.
What we're going to be doing over the next 2 weeks is I'm going to be showing you how to put together a completely functional set of these. But we want you to take our design and then run with it, because no one wants to be walking around in the same set of goggles that everyone else has.
Tech News Today.
The money that's coming in from all of these private investors, from VCs, that's what fuels innovation. And then it hits a natural cap. And that's where we are right now.
I feel like the difference between now and let's say, the first big tech bubble of the early 2000s is just that we're here again. Yeah. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Twit, take it to the bank.
I think once people just let their beards explode out of their face, you'll find that you just evolve into a very, very
the dollar beard club.
You already are.
I need the dollar beard club.
I don't have connectors. I can't do it.
I love how Tanya was keeping her distance on that mic. She had her mic up like, okay, let's keep, fully extend the arm.
Hey, here's what's coming up. We got a great week ahead, too.
Thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things that we'll be talking about next week on Tech News Today. It's Developer Week, San Francisco's largest tech event for developers, with a hackathon and a lot more. Plus, Kara Swisher, Walt Mossberg, and Peter Kafka will host Recode's Code Media Conference, where we are bound to hear some very interesting insights into how tech is transforming what we watch and what we listen to. And 500 startups will host their demo day. The next bit, Robin, the cloud-integrated Android smartphone, begins shipping to Kickstarter backers next week and will be offered to the public on Thursday, February 17th. We should be getting a Robin for review on this show sometime soon. All that and a lot more coming up on Tech News Today, hosted by Jason Howell and myself, Megan Maroney.
Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC, your daily dose of tech news at its new time. Make sure you tune in. Tech News Today. Our show today brought to you by Carbonite Online Backup. Here we come skidding into the tax season. Time to get those files together, your receipts. You have them, right? You didn't lose them, did you? Wouldn't it be terrible if your hard drive died tomorrow? That's why you need a good backup solution. That's why you need Carbonite. Automatic, continuous backup. And it's not backup next to your computer where it could be stolen, burned to the ground, destroyed in an earthquake, but backup to the cloud where it's safe. Your data goes on vacation in Carbonite's climate-controlled data centers. It's got its feet up. It's resting. It's relaxing. It's ready for you. Whenever you need it back to work, you just log on to your Carbonite account on any computer. Download all your stuff. They have free apps on the smartphones. You get your stuff. You can even check to make sure it's all there. There's versioning if you use Windows. I tell you, it is a great choice for home, for office. More than 1.5 million people trust Carbonite to back up their computers, their servers, their personal files, their business files. Don't take that risk. Disaster happens. You have fire insurance. Get data insurance. Carbonite. Try it free. Right now, just use the offer code TWIT. That way, when you buy, you get 2 free bonus months. Carbonite.com, offer code TWIT. Very affordable. In fact, I was just looking at a price comparison of all the cloud backup services. And at $59.99 a year for the personal plan, for as much data as you can get, I mean, there's no limit. That is easily the best deal out there on data, less than $5 a month. Carbonite.com. Don't forget the offer code TWIT for 2 months free. That makes it an even better deal. You're watching This Week in Tech.
Apollo Creed's son backs up all his stuff to the cloud, backs up all his data to the cloud.
That's right. It's in the cloud, man. You don't have to worry. I just took a picture. Actually, I do that all the time. We go to a restaurant, and I'll take a picture of the specials menu. The camera phone has invented whole new reasons for taking pictures. I mean,
it's just my memory.
Oh, yeah.
It's your memory.
Oh. It's like literally, like I take pictures of anything that I'm interested in. I'm just, and of
like
course.
You go to the store at Whole Foods, you know how you check out and you have to give them the numbers? You have to tell them, like when you buy a little thing in bulk, like, nuts or something, pecans, right? And you go and they're like, what was the number? And you're like, oh, crap, I forgot to write it on the back.
Take a picture.
So I started I just take the picture of it, boom. And then I come to the checkout. There it is.
My son and his friends were over. I found a pair of keys. I started texting him a description. Oh, your friend left your keys here. They look. And then I realized, what am I doing? I took a picture. Sent him the picture. He sent it to all his friends. I thought, what am I doing? It's hard to get in those habits, you know. Now I have to remember to talk to my my Amazon Echo. And
my big thing is I every time someone gives me a business card, I just immediately take a picture. Like as soon as I walk away from it.
Do you
have
software that you use that scans it?
No, I don't. Yeah. I should. I just want to make sure that I.
You have it.
Yeah. Get a picture. You know, because always that guy and I took.
Stick it in your pocket, and then you come to your pocket out, and it's gone.
Exactly.
You missed it.
Yep.
So Google had a really interesting question. This a letter that they wrote to the NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, to the director of the self-driving car project at Google, wrote to them saying, "Hey, who's driving a self-driving car?"
We would like it to be us.
Well, currently the law is whoever's sitting in the left-hand frontmost seat
is accountable.
Is accountable and has their, you know, the wheel and the pedals is accountable. But one of the problems is Google's cars don't have a wheel and a pedal.
Which really bothers me.
So Google said, we need an interpretation of the law. We say there are a couple of possible interpretations. One, you can interpret the term driver as meaningless for the purpose of self-driving cars. There's no human driver. Just say it's inapplicable. Two, you could say the driver and operator are referring to the software.
Right.
Three, you could say whoever's sitting in what would be the driver's seat
right.
or some designated seating position, perhaps the left front outboard seating position, is the driver regardless of whether that person could drive the car.
This so the is key all, is, by the way, is you just sit on the other side of the car.
Make sure that seat's empty.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's driving the car? Nobody's driving this bus.
Put tape over that. Like, do not sit here to tell you.
So really, I was kind of impressed with this. They published this letter. It was very long and thoughtful, and they really went back and forth. And I really found it fascinating. But ultimately, they decided that for purposes of the law, for purposes of liability, for future regulation, we're going to consider the software to be the driver. NHTSA interprets the software driving system, SDS, to be the driver or operator of the vehicle. And they go through all the paragraphs of the vehicle statutes saying, we agree that the SDS is the driver. So now you know.
You know, this is all the end of, for all the, you know, this is the end of people driving.
I hope so.
I mean, like,
you know, it turns out we're bad drivers.
It is like, but yeah. I was really thinking about it, how much I dislike driving and how much I'd like to have this. But I was like, but really, like, our generation is the last. Like, we're going to remember, like, my kids might drive, my kids that are 6 and 8. But
they might be the last generation to learn how to drive a car.
They may, I think that by 2040, possibly earlier, it will not only be unlikely for a human driver to be driving, but illegal. So,
wow.
Like,
illegal?
This is my big prediction. Like, I'll have to come back to Twit in 2040 and see how I do.
All right.
I'll be here.
But it'll either be illegal for a human to drive on a public road, or it will be in discussion about making it illegal. Because once the cars are completely autonomous.
I'm 84 years old, but I will be here to talk to you about it.
I told you that it was going to be this
because
way.
Because you know what?
Because it's good that cars...
We're going to have genetic modification. I'm going to be younger in 25 years.
The issue
you might not be able to drive if you're old. Like, I can see them saying, okay, if you're 65, 70 years old, you cannot drive anymore. But the actual joy of driving, which I love doing, you can't take that away from people. People aren't going to let you take it away from them. We have sports cars. We have racing. We have all these things. People aren't just going to stop driving. Just because you guys don't like driving because you live in major cities and it sucks. People love driving.
That's exactly what footmen and buggy drivers used to say. You know, people love horses.
But people still ride horses for fun, right?
Yeah, exactly. For fun. People, driving will happen for fun.
The problem is that they're going to get to a point where they realize that 99% of the accidents, you know, that's going to get by 2040, 99% of accidents are created by human drivers. It's slowing down the entire progress of it because
I would at this point say I would say 100% of accidents are caused by human drivers.
At this point,
I don't think there's a lot of robots on the road.
You're going to get to a point where there's... The number, what'll start the conversation is when half the cars on the road are autonomous and the other half are human. And they're
the
going to go.
Humans are causing all the accidents.
The humans are running into the cars. They're causing the accidents. They're doing all the stuff.
Or
and they're
going
to go.
Somebody hacks into your car and drives off a cliff, or something glitches. Somebody deletes a code, and the first letter of the street sign comes off.
Okay, these things happen. But
I'm just saying. Look, we need to drive. Just stop talking about it because it's making me upset. I already got my call from Adam from when you messed up.
You're hugging your husky.
People want to drive. Driving is important, and I'm not giving up on what Uber's going to do to all these people that they think they're making this money in 5 years, and they buy all these cars from Tesla.
All right, how many people do you think will be killed by hacked automobiles in the year 2020?
If it's just one, Leo, it's one too
many. How many people do you think were killed last year in auto accidents? 30,000. 30,000. In the U.S.
People die smoking cigarettes. Half of those, I believe, are drunk. But I'm doing that, and people still smoking cigarettes. And we ain't banned that yet.
Yeah, well, that's another story for another day. We really ought to ban that.
Well, we have actually banned it from most places, public right. You know, places, because of how it affects everyone else. And I think that that's the issue is that the reality is what's killing the car is the smartphone, because I would much rather have, like, when I go to I don't rent very often now because I just Uber around when I get to a location that I'm working in. And the reason is because I want to go back to work. I want to go do whatever. It's not work, I just want to go back to Facebook or Google or CNN or whatever. I don't want to drive in, you know, some other country anymore, you know, or some other city, you know, and so I find it annoying that I have to do it now. And I think that my kids, who are my older kids, who are 21 and 19, they don't have any. I mean, I'm trying to persuade them to get a license. Like, they don't have any interest in, like, they do their thing, and they're not interested in driving at all.
Also, living in a city, people that live in rural areas, kids, they need a car because you want a car, you got to get around. It's also where you live in the environment that you're in, and that has a lot to do with it. But who also wants to do the speed limit? I got places to go. I can't be sitting there with this car doing 25 miles an hour when I like to do 45.
I guess my whole thing, though,
you're the problem, Owen. You are the problem.
You're the ones that are going to. You're going to be the one that creates this outlaw of humans.
Me and all the people that are all those Uber guys that are ruining the jobs for taxis, and 5 years, they're going to be really upset when they come to find out that Uber been playing for fools, and they're going to be driven around by Teslas that are automated.
Who are these old people, and why are they on the screen here?
They're getting driven around in Google cars.
Oh, this is driving around in the Google cars.
There's a big challenge, though, on our way to self-driving vehicles, and that's that the software, and a lot of this is being worked out right now, right? The software is having to make decisions based on algorithms, is how, you know, it's likely being thought of, about when I am a car and I come up to a dog that's in the road and I've got two people in the back, right? If I stop and it's going to give everybody whiplash, or I hit the animal, what do I do, right? Or if it means swerving and hitting a tree,
there's this whole ethical thing. I understand, but we can solve all that. And you know what? It will still be better than
2040.
It will still be better than 30,000 people dying from stupid.
But I don't think it's going to be this big thing. I think it's going to be literally a generation of kids that grew up on their iPhones.
They won't care.
They literally
want to Snapchat
be all
more.
These
just
old
more
people in their cars. You know, and this is the reason Google's working on this car, is because all the time you spend in your car is taking you away from Google. You know, like that is why you have a self-driving car, is because then you can keep on searching.
I think that the next thing is going to be self-smoking cigarettes, because many, many more people die from smoking every year. And
I think
if
it'd be great.
Just get the cigarettes
just
to
have a cigarette,
smoke themselves.
Just sit it over in the corner and let it smoke.
Let it smoke itself. It would save many lives.
Yes.
We shouldn't underestimate the steps it's going to take between here
and I agree.
It's going to be demonized. There are going to be a lot of people that are going to demonize technology when self-driving cars become a thing. And it makes the software makes that one choice that costs somebody a life, and it doesn't. that is going to be a huge deal, and the media is going to be all over it, and there are going to be protests, and there are going to be people demonizing technology, and it's going to be a difficult road between here and there. And there's a lot of benefits to it, but it's going to be.
Here's a cool thing. Here's a good thing. Cheer up. Amazon has just released. They licensed a game engine that's the one that used to build Crysis, and they have now made it available free to anybody who wants to write a video game on a new platform, Lumberyard. It's a free 3D game engine. And Gamelift, which is a service for building backends for multiplayer games. And of course, Amazon owns Twitch, so you automatically get Twitch built in. It is really interesting. I don't know how many people have the skills to write their own, you know, video games, but the fact that you can get CryEngine without licensing it for commercial use, use Amazon as a back end, is unbelievable.
How many new whippersnappers to the game who couldn't afford to license or pay for the other engines are finally going to get their foot in and get a stronghold because of this thing called Twitch? And oh yeah, Uncle Leo, let me tell you, a couple people make a few dollars off of Twitch.
Twitch is
too.
Great, but they make money playing games.
They're not getting millions of dollars.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Twitch, Uncle Leo.
No, Twitch is good. You know how you make money on Twitch though? You find benefactors in chat who just give you money because they're lonely, rich people. That's the way to make money on Twitch.
I know you're not lonely, Uncle Leo, but I was just, if I could get a loan, if you sent me the check and it was blank, just know that I wouldn't take advantage of it.
I know you wouldn't, and that's why that check is in the mail, Owen J.J. Stone.
I appreciate you.
Funny thing, though, about this Lumberyard, they also released new terms of service. And just so you know, and this is always the case in terms of service, you can't run a nuclear plant with the software, you know. Yeah. But it says your use of Lumberyard materials must comply with Amazon Web Services' acceptable use policy. The Lumberyard materials are not intended for use with life-critical or safety-critical systems, use in a operation of medical equipment, transportation, autonomous vehicles, air traffic control, that kind of thing. However, this restriction will not apply in the event of the occurrence certified by the United States Centers for Disease Control or successor body of a widespread viral infection transmitted via bites or contacts with bodily fluid that causes human corpses to reanimate and seek to consume living human flesh, blood, brain, or nerve tissue, and is likely to result in the fall of organized civilization. So there's the good news.
Can we give a slow clap to Amazon for a few things? One, for realizing the market. Two, for helping out young upstarts. Three, for the fact that not only is it free, but they're giving great power to it and elevating their brand to people that will later on use and pay for their service if they start making an income off of it. Like, so many times big companies miss the boat, and Amazon has an aircraft carrier right now, and they're like, look, everybody come aboard unless you're a zombie, and we about to take off in outer space. And it is amazing.
I just think that finally there's a tool against the zombie apocalypse that we can all count on.
And I'll get behind that.
Doesn't your Tesla also have the antibacterial mode?
It does. It has bioweapon defense mode.
There we go.
I think I had to pay extra for that, and I don't know why I did, but I did. Elon is so brilliant. I am just like, and everybody who buys a Tesla essentially is just talk about suckers on YouTube. I am just a sucker for anything Elon wants to put in there. I will buy. You want doors that go like this? I'll buy it. It's an insane mode, ludicrous mode, whatever. Bioweapon defense mode. It has a filter that will literally filter out bioweapon gases. And there's a button on the console that you press.
Don't press it too often. Like, you don't want to use it up.
No, unimportant
things like general pollution and smog. You want to use it up when you need it.
So I should check and make sure I bought that.
The one reason I don't like Elon is because he's that one guy right now on Earth that is just like a better guy than
most
guys.
He's Tony Stark.
Like when you said, now you're Tony Stark. He's just a dude that literally says, I want to do that. And everybody says, you can't do that. And then he does it, whether he almost fails to do it. He's like, I want to do that. And then he does it. I think to myself, I want to go to the gym. And I don't go to the gym. But this dude wants to start
I can't even get to the gym. This guy's going to Mars.
I feel like such lesser of a man dealing with this dude in existence. It makes me angry.
People mock Tesla for years. I remember people saying for years and years, they'll never bring a car to market. They'll never be publicly traded.
They're a joke.
And by the way,
SpaceX, they'll never get a rocket into the air. And they've had their troubles. But
Tesla lost a lot of money this quarter, and the stock still went because they said we're getting close. We're going to start taking orders on the affordable
$35,000
Model 3 in March.
And the rattling that you hear is everyone in Detroit shaking.
Yeah.
It was cute when it was $85,000 a year, $110,000 a year. Not cute when it's $25,000 a year.
CES, everything that was at CES and the cars and the car companies were talking a big game at CES, but everything at, that they were talking about at CES was them running from Tesla and Google, right? They are scared. They are deeply, deeply scared about what Tesla and Google, because those cars are increasingly, you know, they are shells for a lot of data and computing and machine learning and all of these kinds of things. And they're, you know, electric, right? And so all of them were trying to talk that game about electric vehicles and about, you know, autonomous vehicles. But in many ways, all of them are trying to catch up with what Tesla and Google are doing. They're very and rumored to be Apple, right, as well. I mean, more than rumored. The Guardian found some documents that shows Apple's working on it. So it is more
well, in fact, strong rumor that Apple is going to continue to try. They've been trying to buy Tesla. And the problem is Elon has plans. He doesn't want to sell it. But at some point, I think he might.
Huh? Nah, if you were Elon, I wouldn't. That company could be, they could be bigger than Apple. I mean, if they do, if they play their cards right, right? They're ahead in the market.
And Apple doesn't succeed.
They're addressing. Yeah, right. If Apple doesn't succeed. I mean, the markets that they're addressing, you know, transportation and energy, those are just massive markets that are going to define the next 50 years.
Yeah.
If I was Tesla, no way I would sell. Like, they could be the biggest company in the world.
And it just shows you old school marketing and men to sit in a room. And I don't know if you saw the Star Wars pool toys that went out into the world this week, but I mean, they look like adult toys. And you just think, there's somebody who sits on a board, who sits in a meeting, who sits in the room, there's a designer.
I gotta find the picture.
And then somebody made it. And then it still got past all these checks and balances. You're like, why?
Yes.
Detroit's sitting there, and you know what? Elon said, you know what? Forget it. I'm not even going to sue you guys anymore. You want my thing? Take it. And they still can't make anything like it. I don't know if you ever sat in a Tesla. It's not the most comfortable seat in the world to be sitting in one.
I don't care.
It's not that hard to I'm saying it's not that hard to replicate if you really wanted to do it. But they sit on their old world laurels, and by the time they realize that they must change, it's going to be too late, and the too late is looking like it's coming on the way.
And by the
trying,
way,
I mean, they're trying hard, but it's just models that they have to become data companies. They have to be computing companies. They have to become, you know, electric vehicle companies. And these are just so massive. It's turning the Titanic, right? And they'll say, we've been working on these things for 10 years, you know, but they're just getting lapped by Google and Tesla on all the important things.
Well, and when you look at some of these companies, I mean, like Apple, if Apple steps into it, Apple's got way more cash than all of the American car makers combined.
Wow.
You know, so the thing is that, you know, Apple, you know, they're competing. It's not that they're competing with little companies that these little upstarts. They're competing with companies that are bigger than they are and, you know, have a lot more resources and don't have any history that they have to deal with.
I mean, Google has hired up, you know, the DARPA challenge, the robot challenge where they tried to get cars that drive, you know, Google has hired up like so many of those people. It's actually kind of a shame because a lot of them they would do a lot of papers and everything about self-driving vehicles and autonomous, you know, and all of these things. Google has hired many of them.
I think Google and Uber have stripped Carnegie Mellon to the bone.
Ah,
yes.
Wow.
They have taken all these people out of the market, right? So they're behind the firewall now. They're not contributing these to academic research, which then in one sense hurts the existing players because they can't, they don't have the R&D invested in these things and they're not hiring them. They're hiring a lot of these people. It's not that they aren't. They are too. GM and Ford and Toyota and everyone. But you know, Google and Tesla have been so singularly focused on these issues that they're, you know, that they're just taking these huge leaps that the car companies aren't. They still have to protect their existing businesses, and they still have to make sure they have to invest a lot in making sure those businesses keep their profits up quarter to quarter. And that's, you know, it's an innovator's dilemma, and it's going to come, you know, home to roost over the next few years unless they make some big changes. And they're trying, but we'll see, you know, we'll see.
We're going to take a break, wrap this up in a moment. Jason Heiner from Tech Republic, CBS Interactive, and author of a book that just came out, Follow the Geeks. Go to followthegeeksbook.com to get your copy. I hear it has an excellent ninth chapter. Actually, all 10 of them are fabulous.
Twit users, the code for Twit users, too. Twit, you can get a 10% discount on the book just because Twit Twit Army is so awesome.
Offer code TWIT at the website, right? Followthegeeksbook.com.
Yes, sir.
Squarespace side. Alex Lindsay, pixelcore.com. Oh, doctor. No one knows where he comes from. Probably not this planet, but he does have a husky.
This is you, Uncle Leo. This is your spirit animal.
That's my spirit animal?
This is a wolf in sheep's clothing. That's you.
I'm a sheep in wolf's clothing. I'm the opposite.
You never saw Rocky. I'm not falling for anything you say to me anymore. So you write this week. Until you fix your life, I don't believe anything you say. You're not a fool to me. Fool me twice, shame on me. What did Bush say? Fool me three, whatever.
He couldn't figure it out either, by the way.
Something in Tennessee. You're fooling people something, too many times.
The Tennessee and the thing with the thing. And the show Stop is brought fooling. To you by my mattress, which I love. Actually, not just my mattress, my pillow and my mattress. Casper, another one of these great companies that's reinventing a business you would have thought, well, that's done. That business, everybody knows how to do that. No, because you know what? A mattress store sucks. It sucks the profit out of a mattress. They have to double the cost just to support the mattress store. It sucks the life out of you because you go in and it's bright in the store and the sales girl's looking at you like, what are you going to do to my mattress?
And then you take a nap and then they get upset.
You try to lie on it. You try to snog on it and they don't like that. And how do you know if it's a good mattress? You don't. Casper has a better way, folks. And everybody I know who has a Casper, including myself, loves their Casper. Made in the U.S. with state-of-the-art, obsessively engineered technology to give you a breathable, comfortable mattress that simultaneously gives and supports you. It's what you want. It's what you want in a spouse and a mattress. Somebody who will give and support. It has just the right sink and bounce. And actually show the video of me sinking and bouncing at the same time. There's our Casper queen size in a box head size. It's amazing. You open it up, and as somebody pointed out, it doesn't smell like latex or anything. It's fresh. It's delicious. You open it up. That's a Tyvek sleeve. They give you a little cutter in there. They give you a little book. It's so cute. They really package it up. And look, the thing, it turns into a queen-size bed. Now, you say, but wait a minute, Leo. How do I know if it has the perfect... Well, you could watch this video. That's Sink and Bounce. Or you could order a Casper. They're very affordable because they don't have to pay that store overhead. And we're going to give you $50 off when you use our offer code TWIT. And you have 100 nights to enjoy that mattress. And if at any time in the first 100 nights you say, that's not for me, they'll come and get it and refund you every penny. You don't have to worry about returns because that they know, hey, there's no way you're going to buy this mattress unless they make it easy to return it if you don't like it. You will like it. You will love it. And by the way, get a couple of pillows. Dual layer pillows. They're the most comfortable. I thought I was a feather pillow guy. I have cast aside my feather pillows.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. You would never have heard me say that before. These are the bestest pillows. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm just, I don't know. I just love it. And very affordable. $500 for a twin. Get the biggest they've got, $950 for the king size. Compare that to any other mattress in the mattress store, you'll see you're getting a great deal and a great mattress. Go to Casper, CASPER.com/TWIT. And as I said, use the promo code TWIT, $50 off. Terms and conditions apply. You could find those at Casper.com/terms, logically enough. $50 off with the promo code TWIT at Casper, CASPER.com. A week from today, Samsung is going to unpack the S7. And we're going to cover that live. It's right before the radio show, 10 a.m. Pacific. We will bring you live coverage of Samsung's event at Barcelona, in Barcelona for the Mobile World Congress. We've got a team there covering this. They're flying out soon.
Who went?
Who's at Mobile World? I know Carson's producing it. Is Father Robert hosting it? Do you know, Jason?
I missed the flight.
I think Father Robert is going.
And Owen, you're going, right?
I missed the flight.
Oh, man.
I had to be here for you today. So, you know, next
These
time.
These things happen.
Next time.
These things happen. So we will give you, and then at the same day, the 21st, LG is going to announce the G5, the successor to what I think was arguably one of the great phones of 2015, the G4. We also, as Megan mentioned, we're going to get that new Robin phone. This is all of a sudden, we just got used to the phones, and now we're going to get all new phones.
I think Apple's going to have more.
All new phones.
Small.
The 5Z.
The 5Z. Actually, well, 5SE. Are they calling it the 5S? 5S. That's Apple's going to apparently ship that right after its announcement on March 15th, according to the rumor mongers.
And possibly an iPad 3 Air.
Yeah, the iPad, because they didn't do a new iPad last fall. They did the mini, but they didn't do a full Air, so the new iPad Air 3. I'm really looking, and we've talked about this on MacBreak Weekly, to see a pencil.
I think a pencil. I mean,
for the new iPad Air.
I'm not interested in any iPad that doesn't have one now that I have.
Yeah.
I think my iPad Pro is too big for most of what I want to do. I really want is a mini with a pencil. I mean,
it's funny how that works when, you know, other people have been having styluses for a long time.
I know.
It's so amazing when Apple released something. Everybody's, oh my God. I'm like, dude, it's, you know, anyway, whatever.
It is a really nice pencil, though.
It really is. It is excellent. They do everything better. I get it. Last thing that's not app related before we go, I just want to ask your opinion. SoundCloud ain't got no money, and it makes me sad.
Wow, isn't that sad? $70 million they've lost over the last 2 years. Analysts say, and I don't hear anybody arguing against it, that they will run out of money. If they don't get somebody to put more money into SoundCloud, they're actually just going to go belly up. And that is tragic.
It hurts my heart almost as bad as you not watching Rocky. It's sad.
Well, I'm going to watch Rocky, but I don't know if anything can save SoundCloud.
Apple buy him.
Google should buy him. Google's into like acquisition charity. Like, this is a perfect case. Right?
For those of us who don't, actually, I use SoundCloud, but for those people who don't use SoundCloud, what is SoundCloud, Owen?
SoundCloud is the way that I listen to a lot of my podcasts and content, and I find a lot of new artists for music that aren't in the iTunes store and stuff like that. I find a lot of bands, alternative rock bands, like small groups. I find a lot of comedians on SoundCloud. I've enjoyed SoundCloud for a long time. The app works great. It's an awesome platform.
It's also like the most, you know, I talked about how all CMSs suck and some suck a little less. I mean, they make the process of publishing a podcast, for example, so much better than what it used to be. I mean, you know, people in this podcast know and that are listening, you know, who've done some of this before, the days of having to edit RSS feeds and XML and all of that stuff. I mean, SoundCloud makes it so much easier to just, you know, start a podcast, publish it, and just be able to focus on, you know, building great content rather than all of the stuff you have to go through to do it. And there's others who have done it, but I think that they sort of, you know, like we talked about on the podcast and other ways, they just sort of build a better mousetrap. They built an audio CMS essentially that is, you know, easier and better.
It's YouTube for audio, basically.
It is.
Right?
Yeah, it's YouTube for audio. Very good. Perfect.
And it would be sad, but yeah, you can also see why it's hard for them to make money.
Yeah.
Because you can use it for free and do most of what you want to do.
Well, they did put limits on it recently. Not how recent it is, but you know they have put limits on that now, where you can't just upload unlimited hours. I think they have like a 6 hour, 10 hour cap now, or something like that, before you have to jump.
Enough for
a
many
service.
Podcasts, however.
Yeah,
you know what the new thing for podcasts is, putting a video on Facebook. I thought this was really interesting. WNYC, which does a lot of podcasts, has started doing this on their Facebook page. Of course, you can't post audio only on Facebook. So they post a static video, a static still. Yeah. And then the thing is, it starts playing. Of course, audio doesn't autoplay, which is kind of a problem.
Cool trick that I'm stealing from someone, because I just did my first solo podcast last week, is I'm just going to go on my PlayStation and like fail very badly at, you know, Call of Duty or an NFL game or something, however long it takes for the time of the podcast is, upload it and then rip it back down and submit the video, be playing a game with my audio underneath of it.
There
so you have something to look at and be engaged if they want to watch it.
There you go.
But that's a very good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
More so than a static image, though.
Yeah. Put a little video in it. What's so hard about putting a little video in it?
Yeah. Yeah, or some images. I mean, we've done this a little bit. You know, Tech Republic pays for SoundCloud Pro. The Tech Republic podcast, we run off of SoundCloud.
Oh, good.
And we've done the thing where we posted them on YouTube and put an image up, you know, so that people can listen to them that way, because lots of people listen to stuff on YouTube all the time. People have YouTube open in a window and have that tab, you know, not even active, but are listening to stuff, right? So you can play to that demographic too. using YouTube video and maybe Facebook video too. We haven't done that.
It's not dead yet. It in fact, really, SoundCloud's saying we're doing great, we're growing, there's some concerns when you lose that much money and you're basically taking it out of the investors' pockets and you need more investment. They just raised $77 million, so
someone's invested.
Somebody's putting money into it, and if you're a rich person listening, please do.
They're in Europe too. They're in Germany or Sweden.
Yeah, they're Germany. Yeah, they're German.
So I mean, it's one of those things that the European startups, right? It's like they there's a lot of good things happening in the European startup.
But it's tough to raise money, I think.
It is. It's harder.
They don't have a tradition of venture capital.
It's kind of what I was getting to. It's low risk, right? And failing is looked at badly. Whereas here, you know, it's like, hey, you had three companies that, you know, went under and like your fourth one hits great. It's a thing. Whereas, you know, in other cultures, it's still one of those things. Failure is kind of a black mark.
I wanted to mention this because we probably mentioned the Jesus Christ Jesus Crust blog post in which he reported Windows 10 was phoning home like thousands of times. Thank you, Ed Bott, who is a Windows reporter for ZDNet and a friend of this network and has been on Twit many times. He says, when it comes to Windows 10 privacy, don't trust amateur analysts. He points out that if you look at the, you know, the data from Jesus Crust, it's not a problem of Windows phoning home at all. And in fact, it's Windows trying to get online and saying, what's going on? Why can't I get online? It's NetBIOS. It's most of the connections were to a Teredo server, which converts IPv6 addresses to IPv4. And of course, because it couldn't get through because it was blocked, it kept trying. There's not evidence that Windows 10 phones home at all by any means. And thank you, Ed Bott, for setting the record straight. And I wanted to do the same.
And that's good. One note on that. That's good. And Ed did a great job of it, like he always does on that. And obviously, ZDNet, I work for Tech Republic and ZDNet. So full disclosure there, Ed does great stuff. I'll put an asterisk on that, though, because I also just had an IT consultant. I feel like I would be dishonest if I didn't say it. Like I had an asterisk on this because I had an IT consultant tell me this week that he had a Windows 10 machine that he could not get, that kept phoning home on something. And they, you know, disabled it, trying to disable this certain update that it was trying to do. And they said that it was like it kept doing it, like they had disabled it and they had done it. And I've heard multiple reports like this. And so, you know, because this is something that we cover, and I keep hearing these reports, I'm just sort of telling everybody out there who is, you know, an IT administrator and an IT consultant and helping people sort of maintain their privacy and security and all of that, you know, just keep an eye on this and make sure that there are, you know, that you know what's happening on your network, because there are cases where some of this stuff is causing problems by, you know, some of this phone and home stuff. So do like what Ed did, do your own research, analyze your own packets, do all of that kind of stuff.
And treat it with a grain of salt.
And treat it with a grain of salt, these reports that you hear. Yeah. And like Ed said, you know, look what analysts you're listening to and do some of your own research.
And, you know, one of the things that really makes people a lot of money on Twitch and on YouTube, and I'd like to make some of that money, is the Let's Play videos. So I think as we end this show, we should all get together to play the new game from the Federal Bureau of Investigation called The Slippery Slope to Violent Extremism. Don't be a puppet. You ready, everybody? You want to play the game? Have you played this game yet? Use your arrow keys to steer through the lands of violent extremism. Oh, I blew up jihad. Oh. Hit the space bar.
This is exactly how the NSA hacks into your computer.
I think
good job, Uncle Leo.
but I'm avoiding the slippery slope. Again, violent extremism wins.
No one go to this site.
This is the FBI.
They're hacking into his system right now.
No, they're not. How could they be doing that? It's just Flash. Wait a minute.
You think it's just Flash? You clicked
right.
You just told
They just downloaded your whole hard drive.
And you're playing this game with our exactly. He's playing.
You know, wait a minute. The enemy is responsible for this injustice.
You know, part of the TOS is like, we can don't now, be a we puppet. Can copy everything and follow
you around.
We must
defend our traditions. The use of violence is the only way to defend our beliefs. Our violent actions will result in a better future. Don't be a puppet. I don't want to be a puppet. Thank you, FBI.
You know,
free the puppet.
Like SETI at home for national security.
Do you think this is going to work in ending jihad?
No. No, I mean, here's the thing is that there's a lot of conversation right now in D.C. about this, about trying to, like, how do we reach out?
How do we reach the kids?
And the reality is that the best way to reach out to extremists or people that are on the brink of extremism is to find people in that community that are not extreme and empower them to say stuff. But, of course, everyone wants to control it so much that we'll think of something, some way for us to talk to the people out there, you know, rather than talking to, you know, I had a guy sitting next to me on a plane that was, I think he has a podcast or a live thing on Periscope called Ask a Muslim. And where
that's
he just
good.
Does his
I
long,
like
no,
that.
It's great. He does
that's
his
what
live
you should
streams.
Do.
You can just ask him questions and he'll just answer, you know, it's just a live stream on Periscope and he's just answering all these questions about, you know, and some of them are haters and all the other stuff, but there are a lot of good questions and he just answers those things. And I was like, that's the kind of person that should, you know, because he's, you know, he speaks at all these things about not falling into extremism, but also talking to people about how to not push that way. And the thing is that it is a you know, what you need to do is take people like that and let them do something, you know, give them the money that, because, you know, they're just all doing their own little thing and let them talk about it, not.
Well, and
to talk
by
about
the way,
for them.
This thing just crashed my Macintosh. So
there you go.
Exactly. Whoop, Alex, by the way, that idea you just had is common sense. And that is not something that the upper echelon thinkers in America get in line with. What you said is what should happen. But some people just aren't commonsensical enough to get it done.
It's just it requires a certain level of trust that is hard to come by sometimes.
I mean, Leo just went on a game with NASA, NSA, checking out his stuff. He's got trust. I don't know why.
All I say is, if we can win their hearts and minds and download their hard drives, the rest will follow. That's all I can say. Owen, J.J. Stone, you know him as Oh Doctor. Ladies and gentlemen.
No. Do me last. I got a message for the people. Everybody else go first.
You want to end with the message to the people?
Yes.
All right. I'll get ready. I'll get a theme song ready for you for your message to the people. Let's start on the right then. Jason Heiner, TechRepublic.com.
Yes, sir.
But more importantly, buy the GD book, followthegeeksbook.com.
Yes, and
it's a great
follow
read.
The geeks on Twitter. Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun. It's been you know, very educational, inspiring, exhausting, and just keeping up with people like you, Leah. So yeah, and again, Twit readers, thank you for all the feedback and support all through the journey. You know, we serial published it, released the chapters as we went, and got great feedback, and then included some of that feedback in terms of the people. There's the comments that we got from the audience, the best ones we included at the end of each chapter as well. And there's a lot of Twit reader or a lot of you know, Twit listeners that are quoted in the book, I'm sure, because of that.
Thank you.
Yes.
Followthegeeksbook.com. Thanks, Jason.
Twit, 10% off. You can use the when you go to purchase it just for Twit readers. You can use or listeners, Twit listeners. The code Twit will get you 10% off.
Nice, Mr. Alex Lindsay, Pixel Core. You did the Final Cut user group. Everything
it did not go well.
Did not go well.
It's up there. It's up there. You know, we didn't have the space really set up yet, and it was a new team, and we use it as an R&D thing, so it was a little rough. But
did you tweet that link on how to work on a movie set?
I
tweet that.
I didn't write it, but I'll tweet it.
I know you didn't write it, but you put it on Facebook, and I thought it was great, and everybody should read it.
It's on public, my public thing too on Facebook.
Okay.
But it's I'll tweet it as well,
because it's a great article.
Yeah, it's
nice.
Follow him on Twitter at Alex Lindsay with an A. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a final word from Reverend Dr. Owen. Turn up my sound here. Reverend Dr. Owen J.J. Stone. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you... Oh, doctor!
Your music is messing up my mood.
Wait a minute. What do you want? Well, you want all something right. A little quieter,
no,
a little calmer?
No music. You stop talking. You're not even there right now. I'm talking to the people.
Shh.
Okay.
Quiet.
First of all, it's Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day. If you're out there and you're alone, you are not alone. Roses are red, violets are blue. If you're alone, I'm here for you. You can tweet me. You can Facebook me. Do whatever you need to do. Get in touch with me. And I'll be there. I'll send you a message. I might send you a digital hug because I know how rough it is to be alone. I'm stuck on an internet show with a whole bunch of dudes, and I ain't had no lady today. So I understand the pain that you're going through, and I'm here for you. Two things I need you to do for me. My IQMZ right now is directed to my Facebook page. Go listen to my podcast, Doc Tales. It's horrible, but you can feel free to tell me that. The second thing I need you to do is tweet Leo, Facebook Leo, email Leo, write him a handwritten letter and mail it to him and tell him that he needs to watch Rockies 1 through 3, if not all of the Rockies. Please let him know that it is un-American to have not done such in his life. He is too old and too Caucasian to have not seen Rocky. He is not allowed to come to the East Coast, get on a plane to the Midwest, or leave San Francisco until he has seen Rocky 1 through 3. I appreciate you in supporting me and making him do his American duty in an election year. We got to see this movie with Uncle Leo. We got to make sure that he becomes an American the way he is supposed to do. And I think that another twit is in the can.
Doing the twit. All right.